Bill, I want to be the first one to tell you, may the fourth be with you.
That's very kind of you, and you have a speech impediment. What's wrong with your tongue?
All right, you knew I was going to say that. You prepared for this.
I would have bet my house on it.
I enjoy Star Wars a great deal, but I don't live it and breathe it. But it's fun for me to say, may the fourth be with you.
Sure, sure.
And Cinco de Mayo tamale.
Yes. And it's rare you get them back to back, but when it is, boy, you have to celebrate it. So Yoda green margaritas for everybody.
Oh, you're so cute to play along.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Even though the museum's not going to be here.
Well, there have been some twists and turns, haven't there, about the George Lucas Museum?
Yeah, and I was listening to the End of the Row Con show yesterday, and the bottom line is it wasn't sold properly. It's not just going to be Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be probably a minor part of it.
Mm-hmm. But the Friends of the Park, I think, are not concerned about that. They're concerned about the way the city will look as a result of the structure being built. So I know later on we're going to talk about there's a big rally later today, correct?
Yes, at 4 p.m., may the 4th be with you. Perfect day to do it. It's a make it or break it rally. Because how many, I mean, whose friends are they of the park? Whose friends are they?
The park's friends. The park,
well, what about the people's friends?
Oh, no, it's the park's friends that matter. You know that. It's always been that way. It always will be. So we'll sort that out later. I just found out that you didn't see the video of the day yesterday. For people who don't know, and I'm guessing everybody knows at this point, Ted Cruz is no longer running for the presidency. He has also suspended his candidacy for the presidency of the United States.
Can I tell you, I was really shocked, first of all, when the AP alert came over my phone that said Trump won Indiana, like, big time.
Well, they were saying it was pretty expected.
I was telling you all, whole live long day.
Yeah. It shouldn't have shocked you.
Thank you, Casey Jones.
As Steve pointed out in the news yesterday several times, he had a double-digit lead, didn't he, Steve? It wasn't
a
shocker.
There was one lead. I think an NBC poll put him up 15 points, and he nearly won by that much.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so that kind of surprised me. I guess I should have listened to Steve Bertrand, which is going to be on my bumper sticker now.
You should always listen to Steve.
What would Steve Bertrand do?
Mm-hmm.
WWSBD. Mm-hmm. But what shocked me then was the next alert that came over that told me Cruz is bailing.
He's out.
I'm shocked.
He's out. Well, the more shocking part is that upon announcing the fact that he is withdrawing from the race, suspending his candidacy, he popped his wife three times in a 4-second span.
Oh, yeah.
In the most awkward hug I've ever seen in my life. You know how sometimes there's some people who just aren't good at either hugging or things of that nature. And I don't know if Ted Cruz is one of those people, but I do know that you're not supposed to pop your wife three times in 4 seconds, and he did. He hugged her, and then as his dad came by, and I don't know if you know this about his dad, but his dad assassinated President John F. Kennedy.
I did learn that fairly recently.
Did you know that?
Thanks to the Inquirer.
His dad.
Or the Republican nominee.
Right. Right.
Which is no wonder he's the Zodiac killer. I mean, evil spawns in the family.
It's in his DNA, Wendy. If your dad is the one who killed President Kennedy, you're going to be the Zodiac killer. I mean, it's inevitable.
Oh, my God.
So he hugs his wife, and then he sees his dad, who killed President Kennedy, come over. And he goes to hug his dad, and whilst hugging his dad, he punches his wife twice in the chin. And
he elbowed her, and it wasn't that hard.
It was awkward, and but you know, it's, you have to give him a pass on that one. That was a sad night for him. But he did, and she went back in, and he got with the elbow.
But her face says what every wife at some point with their husband says, like, "Oh God,
here we go." Yeah,
I mean, because that, I mean, you know, it's awkward moments. You know, sometimes, you know, you're married to someone for a long time, you're dating someone for a long time, you go in for a nice kiss.
Yes.
You don't usually bonk noses, but right. The first dates and stuff, that there are awkward moments that
right.
happen, and
right.
you can't take them back. But
you know what was striking to me, Wendy, about that, and you said you were surprised when you heard it?
That he bailed?
Yeah, and I wasn't watching either, and I got a text or an alert.
Yeah.
So I tuned in, and, you know, 21st century, he was taking the stage. And so the news had already been broken by several media outlets.
Broken like his wife's nose.
Yes. As he's giving his speech, don't encourage him. And yet there was still absolute shock in that room when he announced
it. There sure was.
And that's kind of not nice that they were shocked by sadness, but it seems like we always know everything now, and you don't see any genuine reaction.
If you and Wendy got texts and tweets saying Ted Cruz is pulling out of the race, how did his own people in his own room not get those same texts and tweets?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I mean. It's weird. And usually they have, you know, in those rooms they have TV monitors. They must have taken him down, or I don't know. That's what I mean. It was just that was the big surprise
for
me. The way they reacted.
Gasped.
Yeah.
What? You're quitting?
I gasped when I read. I mean,
really?
But you read it before he announced it. That's the point. These people are his supporters. They're in a room of his fellow supporters. You think it would have spread like wildfire?
Yep.
But they're there in an exciting moment. They're not on their phones. You know, the phones are in the pocket, turned off, so it doesn't ring during one of his. You know,
maybe, or they're constantly on their phones following the returns. You know,
could be.
It was a weird. It just was an interesting thing.
I am shocked. This guy was putting up the biggest fight of his life. And, you know, Kasich was the one everybody thought was going to bail, and he will soon. But
well, he at this point now, as delegates continue to go Trump's way.
Is he 200 short now?
I don't know the exact number, but it's got to be in that area. So as delegates flood his way now, and I appreciate John Kasich not wanting to quit, but If you have any kind of math skills at all, you add it up and you go, I can't possibly overtake him. And I know they were hoping that it would be a brokered convention, and now that's kind of out the window. So
I think you'll see Kasich just sort of not even be covered. Maybe
is that right?
Well,
it'll become a non-story
in a way. Maybe he might stay in the campaign, but there's certainly as much less relevance now.
Right.
Or relevance, whichever you prefer.
Right. Will Kasich punch Ted Cruz's wife when he gives his speech, though?
Oh, he's going to punch his own wife.
Okay. That makes more sense, I guess.
He makes no sense whatsoever.
It is so clumsy, Bill. It's
you
laughable.
Saw the video.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
but
one time is too many, but by the third time he popped her, you just go, please, Mrs. Cruz, back away from the podium. You're going to hurt yourself. Somebody's going to hurt you.
It's so awkward, too, when you think about, you know, he did. He hugged his wife because she was there. It was a lovely, long embrace, too.
It started out lovely. It didn't end lovely.
Yeah, but it's like, all right,
like his campaign.
Bingo.
Much like his campaign.
Can we do a quick poll? And Republicans that were going to vote for Cruz, can we take five callers?
Sure.
And who are you going to vote for now?
Yeah.
Because I'm just curious.
That's a great idea. All right, so
we'll just take five calls, and then we'll base it on the five calls. Do we need an even number? I don't know how Gallup does it.
Five is good. That's the Gallup poll you're hearing in the background. If you were going to vote for Ted Cruz, and now
you can't.
Is no longer an option, do you go to Trump? Do you go to Kasich? Do you go to Hillary Clinton? Do you go to Bernie Sanders?
First five callers. I just am curious.
Let's see.
312-981-7200. It's Cruz's exit poll, I guess.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. All right, we'll get those numbers for you next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, so this is the song that should have been playing when Ted Cruz announced that he is suspending his campaign.
I saw the Ali Frazier fight years ago, Wendy, and it was a great fight. But Ted Cruz versus Mrs. Cruz, now there is a battle.
Thank God he didn't bite her ear.
Yes.
Like the Tyson Holyfield. Yes.
Right.
All right. So we're just doing a quick exit poll, a Cruz exit poll. And we want to know now that the guy you're supporting, Ted Cruz, has suspended his campaign indefinitely.
Yep.
Who are you going to vote for?
It's a good question.
Well, we're going to find out. Will you keep track of the results
here? Sure,
I got it.
Yep.
And then we can do the percentage because I don't know how to do that.
All right.
All right, Pat, I'm taking it you were a Cruz supporter.
Well, I wasn't a Trump or a Clinton.
All right. So now that Ted Cruz is out of the race, who are you voting for?
I'm probably going to have to pull the lever for Trump because I just don't respect Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. All right. Even though your guy, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, didn't see eye to eye on hardly anything and there was a lot of name calling, you would still go with Trump.
Yeah, I have to go that way. I'd have more respect for Hillary if she'd thrown Bill's clothes out the window of the White House back in the day.
All right. All right. One for Trump.
All right. See, now, is it because you're sticking with your party, or are you really going with the person you think is going to be the better choice? I'm just confused on how people vote, so I'm asking you, Pat.
Okay, my real concern is I just don't trust Hillary.
All right. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot of that.
I think maybe Trump should pick Bernie and put him on his ticket with him.
In a year where anything can happen.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be the craziest thing.
He'd win.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I hope he doesn't hear your idea, Pat.
Well, good luck, guys.
Thanks, Pat.
You as well. All right.
You know what's funny is people will bring up the philandering, the Bill Clinton philandering, but to be honest, Donald Trump has had an episode or two as well, you know, so you can't really pull that out.
Well, that's what fascinates me, like he said about throwing Bill Clinton's clothes out, because as reported, I haven't read his books, he's written in his books about affairs he's
had.
Yeah.
So if that's the attack zone, when it becomes those two, if the attack zone is, well, you know, you got internal trouble with your marriage, if you're Donald Trump, you can't do that.
But he will, because I was thinking of this morning. You know, one of Hillary Clinton's biggest Achilles heels, if you have more than one, is her truthfulness. People say she can't, she doesn't tell the truth. Well, Donald Trump has demonstrated over and over and over that he doesn't tell the truth. He often will say things that are just easily proved to be not true.
Right. Right.
But he does it so many times and with such gusto that it doesn't stick to him.
I know.
And it sticks to her.
I know.
2016, the year of hypocrisy.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
All right, let's get through our our Cruz exit poll. Hi, Clarissa.
Hello.
Okay, Ted Cruz out of the race. Who are you going to vote for?
I have to agree with Pat. I'm going to have to vote for Donald Trump.
Why
are you
going
to have to vote for him?
Because, well, Kasich mathematically is out of the race. I mean, that's just not a no-go. Not going to happen. And I can't vote for Hillary. I agree that she's dishonest. So,
do you think Donald Trump is more honest?
In different ways.
I want to hear the answer.
I mean, one of my issues with Hillary specifically is Benghazi. Donald Trump doesn't have anything huge like that hanging over his political head.
No,
because he hasn't had a political head.
Exactly.
He's got a big head.
Well,
yeah, and I don't want to go in the bag. But I don't want to go in the bag for Hillary. But this really interests me because, you know, she went and testified. There were all these congressional hearings that essentially cleared her. There were investigations that cleared her of that. Donald Trump yesterday tried to tie Ted Cruz's dad to Lee Harvey Oswald, and he keeps telling the story about how General Pershing, you know, killed 49 Muslims with bullets soaked in blood, which is proved to be not true. He keeps saying those things, but those don't have an impact on you.
No.
It's fascinating.
But the part of my problem is I was raised too much of a Republican, so to switch parties, so it'd be very difficult.
And that's what I think a lot of the people will be doing. It's like you're voting for the party more than the person.
Yes.
Very interesting. All right, Clarissa, thank you so much. We got to fly through these.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I was just going to say the interesting part of that is key members of the Republican Party,
are not
key members and their supporters, are jumping ship left and right.
I mean,
the last two guys that ran as on the Republican ticket, both of those guys have denounced Donald Trump and everything about him, and it hasn't seemed to make any kind of impact.
It is a crazy year. Kevin, which way are you voting now that Ted Cruz is out of it?
Independent. Don't even know who it is, but I'm going independent. There's another couple of things I want to say. Shouldn't Kylie be there for the first ever vice president suspending her nomination?
Carly Fiorina?
Carly Fiorina was, I didn't see her last night. Did you?
Yeah, no, she was there.
Was she there?
Yeah.
I didn't see her.
She stayed off the stage. She didn't want to get hit.
She wasn't within reach, but.
Yeah, maybe. And also, call me crazy, but.
Crazy.
Didn't they all sign something? Sure. Didn't they all sign something saying they would have to support?
They all signed it and then quickly said, despite what we signed, we'll do
it. It was invisible ink.
Right.
That's what it was.
I mean, Cruz called Trump yesterday morning in a news conference, called him a pathological liar.
Right.
And said he was amoral.
Right.
You know, and he outlined why he thought he was a pathological lawyer and
liar
and amoral. So I don't know
Freudian
how you come back from that.
All right, Kevin, thank you. We got to fly. We've got two more, and then we're going to hit news a little late today, but we're doing our Ted Cruz exit poll. Tim, who are you going for now that Ted Cruz is out of it?
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to go for Hillary.
You are.
Yeah, I have to. I agree with all your callers so far. I'm a conservative, but Trump just absolutely does not know what he's talking about. He has no clue on the job at hand. I'm not a Hillary fan by any stretch, but a lot of people fought and died to give me the right to vote, and I have to go with who I think would be the better choice. Unfortunately, that's Hillary.
Very fair and very honest.
I'm not voting for her. I'm not voting for her.
You're voting against Trump.
Yeah, pretty much.
I get it.
Very eloquent, Tim. Thank you so much. And our final exit poll, Cruz exit poll voter. Sally, who are you going for now that Ted Cruz is suspending his campaign?
I'm going for Trump.
You are.
Because? I am. Well, I thought I was kind of leaning towards Trump, to tell you the truth, because, it's, you know, to me, I see they all lie. And I think Ted lied as much as Trump did. And what I've decided after he punched his wife in the chin, that I better go for Trump. But basically, I like that Trump he's made his way. You know, he can get to where he's at without knowing something. I think he can surround himself by people who know what to do. I think he's very smart. He supposedly has a high IQ. But I just like him because he says what I want. You know, I'm Hispanic, but my grandparents came here legally, so
yeah.
I'm not for that. And I like that I like the idea of the wall. I like the idea of everything he says. So I got to thinking, when Cruz quit, I thought, you know what? I think I really like Trump.
But Sally, even though, like, he says things about banning, and I know what he says is a temporary ban, but banning Muslims from entering into the country, that kind of stuff, that doesn't scare you?
I agree with that because know what? There's too much criminality going on. They're doing too many bad things. Now, I'm not saying we should deport them, but I think we should do a moratorium on letting people come into our country till we get it straightened out, especially after what Obama's done to it for the last 8 years. It's terrible.
That's your opinion, and we honor it, and we thank you for participating.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Sally. All right, so...
Did I handle that well?
Yeah, very diplomatically. So 60% of the respondents, we only took five calls, but are going Trump's way, and then one independent and one toward Hillary Clinton. I'm not shocked by those numbers. I know that it's, you know, it's just five random calls, but...
Running the gamut, too. Men, women, Hispanic.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, thank you for participating. Quick break, and then back with News 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
The Chicago Improv Festival is back in town. One of our guests, Jonathan Pitt, started this thing years ago, and it started out small but mighty, and every year it gets bigger and better and better. And this year, Leslie Seiler, one of the stars of TV's Degrassi High, and Lauren Ash, one of the stars of NBC's Superstore, are among the headliners. They're all here in the studio with us. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning.
Jonathan, I'm not kidding around. How many years is this now for the
Year 19.
Year 19. That first year, you never in your wildest dreams could have imagined it'd become
what
it is.
No, I thought we had about 5 years.
How about that?
Yeah, I thought we were going to be like a band, have a short run, do a greatest hits, and leave.
And 19 years later,
You're still doing the greatest hits.
Yeah.
But people in the business recognize this throughout the world. This is the biggest improv festival anywhere on the planet.
Yep. And this year, we have performers from 9 countries. We have over 170 shows. I mean, over 170 acts and ensembles performing in 105 shows from 9 countries at 21 venues across the city.
Spectacular.
That is amazing. And you can find out all the information at ChicagoImprovFestival.org.
Yep, because we're a not-for-profit organization. That's why we have that .org.
It would hurt your feelings if you made money. You'd be upset about this, wouldn't you?
Yes, I always say that not everything has to make money, but it can't lose money.
Good. That's a good slogan to live by. Leslie and Lauren, you guys have been performing together, we just found out, for 14 years.
Yes.
That's right.
And tell a little bit about the backstory about your friendship.
Well, we were hired to the Second City Touring Company in Toronto on the same day in 2002. We were in the same audition, and I guess it was love at first sight.
It really was. Yeah. I mean, I think we did a road gig about 6 months in, which really cemented things in Clinton, Ontario,
right.
A small town called Clinton, Ontario, where there may or may not have been some drinking in a hockey arena where the whole town had come out for like a Jack and Jill, like, you know what I mean, like a bachelorette party where you do have...
It's like a fundraiser for a couple that's going to get married. This is a very small town.
You guys
Canada
do
thing.
Fundraisers? Usually
only
we
in
call
very
small
town.
We call it a shower here in the U.S.
Yes, we have those too.
Oh,
but
really?
This is like the bride and the groom come, and everybody from the small town comes, and it's like you buy drink tickets and you celebrate the couple, and it helps them raise money for their wedding.
And it was like 300 people Like,
it was crazy. The whole town, basically.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
Yeah. The police were there, but to hang out.
Yeah. The police came to hang out. There's photos of me draped across one of them. I mean, it really, that was when we really kind of, the friendship was cemented. And so, around that time, we started, because we were obviously touring with the Second City, but we kind of wanted to create stuff on our own as well. So we started writing sketches and doing improv and stuff like that, the two of us, and we've continued to do it for the past 14 years.
Yeah. Ever since.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. We're platonic life partners. Yeah. We take a yearly trip together to Disneyland for a week every year.
Seriously?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, sure do.
I was maid of honor in Siler's wedding, and it's real. It's very, very real.
That's nice.
Two things I love about this. I love funny women, and I love when women bond, because a lot of times women are catty to one another.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's funny, in improv, too, this comes up a lot. There's so many scenes with women on opposite sides fighting over things, or fighting over a man, and I'm just tired of it. I just wanted to say that.
Good. You know what
I mean? I find it so boring. That's something I talk about all the time, is that I always find it more interesting seeing women as buddies than I do as you know, people who are pitted against each other.
Because you got the Real Housewives for that.
Exactly. We've got that. We've got that genre covered, you know?
Yeah.
But I also don't think it's totally realistic, because we often quote our own friendship where it's just like, we don't fight. Like, we just don't. We never have.
What
we
do you
never
have to fight about?
Isn't that nice?
I don't believe that. Although you say you've never fought with your wife.
Very, very rarely, and always. I recognize it as my fault.
That's why you don't
fight. I'm smart enough to know that.
My husband hasn't figured that out yet.
Yeah. I know it's always my fault. Talk about the dynamic when you're working at a place like Second City. You're in a group that's usually seven, give or take a person or two. But when it's a two-person show, that creates a very, very different dynamic, doesn't it?
You're a lot busier. It does. It does. We work together so well. Maybe it's because we're such great friends. We've known each other for so long.
Yeah.
And since we came up through Second City, where you write a show through improv, you come up with an idea, you improvise it a bunch of times until it becomes a sketch. So we just do that, like, sitting in chairs. It's just like, oh, this, and we'll riff for a little bit, and then we'll go, oh, that was really funny. Then we'll go back and write it down.
Yeah.
But yeah, improv is such a big part of what we do. That's just in life. Like, you know, we often talk about that cameras should always be following us, because, you know, at risk of sounding completely self-involved, we're hilarious. And so I think that, you know, it's a travesty that we haven't shared it with the world more.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
All right. And Leslie, you were on an episode or a couple of Degrassi Junior High, but at the sequel.
Yeah. So it's called Degrassi TNG. So the next generation,
like Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Oh gosh, that show's into its like it's a huge success both in Canada and down here, I think. But I played an Earth mom kind of thing, and it's funny, I play a lot of mothers. But
she's not one.
But I'm not. But I'm not one. But I do. I play a lot of moms.
That's the best way to be a mom, by the way. Just play one. Happy Play Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I played a lot of moms until I did this little TV show. It is on Hulu in the States, so you can look it up. It's called 24 Hour Rental, where I play the filthiest prostitute.
Oh, nice.
Great.
It's a real departure from her normal.
Because I'm normally so play like the nice, sweet, like whatever, and then I just play this like ball busting. Can I say that?
Nope. You're fine.
Yeah, this like really aggressive, like angry character. And it was a lot of fun.
I loved Degrassi Junior High when it was on. Yeah. There was a girl, I had my head shaved on one side in the 80s and had really funky hair. And there was a girl who I thought looked like me.
Yeah, we think it's Spike.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's who it was. And I really got into that show. I wasn't a teenager.
Right.
I shouldn't have watched it. And Lauren, you have Superstore, which... me and my two teenage boys laugh hysterically at that show. It is so funny.
Thank you so much.
It is great.
Yeah, it's such a joy. The whole cast really loves each other, and we're just kind of like clamoring to get back to work. We're so excited. It's like it can't come soon enough.
Well,
so.
You're working with another great Canadian comic, Mark McKinney from Kids in the Hall, is on that show. He's great.
I know, and my mom and I watched every episode of Kids in the Hall.
Hysterical.
Like, we were very obsessed, and so coming into work with him when we shot the pilot, I was just like in awe and nervous and all of the above, and we started improvising and we just went, and they actually use a lot of our improv.
Really?
There's an office scene in the first episode where we're giving like a talk about drugs.
Yes.
And they used a lot of that scene, was just made up on the spot, the two of us. And I'll never forget, they like called cut after we did this like long improvised take, and Mark turned to me and said, "God, you're good. I feel like you're teaching me a class on improv." And I cried.
Wow.
Oh, I burst into tears.
What a nice tribute.
It was so sweet. But I was like, yeah. Like,
that's beautiful. Yeah. All right. More discussion about the Chicago Improv Festival. And Jonathan, there's a chance maybe we could give away some tickets to tonight's show, huh?
Absolutely.
All right. So we'll get that done right after this. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Shadowy men on a shadowy planet.
From a shadowy planet. Right? Shadowy man from a I don't remember.
I can't remember.
But Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
I loved this music. The surf rock. It's so cool.
Leslie Seiler's here. Lauren Ash is here. Jonathan Pitts is here representing the Chicago Improv Festival. ChicagoImprovFestival.org is your best bet if you want to know the schedule, if you want all the information on who's playing and where. And again, Jonathan, approximately how many performers and shows are we looking at?
We have over 170 different acts and ensembles in 105 shows. And one of the things that we've done this year, because you guys were talking about, Wendy was talking about how great it is to see women not fighting.
Yeah.
This year we have 14 all-female acts that we put into the festival, duos and groups.
Yeah, I love it.
And in fact, on Monday night, our opening night, we had three all-female acts. We had, you know, I was the only guy on the stage. Everybody else, all three acts, all women, really great, talented women. Because we thought after 19 years, we've had all women acts on the opening night, but never the entire lineup. And so that was one of the things that we did this year. And also we have like 8 all-minority groups. I mean, comedy's changing, and so we want the festival to reflect that.
Funny little thing I'll share with you guys. Women are funny.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Yeah. Very funny. Yeah. Very funny.
Controversial statement.
But I love it when you can just let your guard down and be funny. You know, for many years, we had these bombshells who just wanted to look pretty on the screen. Mm-hmm. Well, we can be pretty and we can be funny. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Molly Shannon said a great thing. It was on one of the like SNL best of discs or something. Yes, I still have DVDs. anyway. And she said she learned from Gilda Radner that you can always be pretty at the after party. Right?
Right. So that's perfect.
I'm making a career based on that.
Yes, on Superstore. That's true. I'm printing a picture up because my sons love that show. So I want you to autograph it. And I was trying to look for a flattering picture of Dina. And
there isn't a character photo that's going to be flattering. We just had meetings because we're talking about going into season 2. I just had a meeting with the showrunner, and he's like, "Do you have any thoughts about season 2?" And I'm like, "Can we just get some better pants?"
That was the only thing
I said. I was like, "Look, I have no problem looking dowdy. I have no problem. Like, I like that she looks the way she looks.
Yeah.
But I was like, but those pants, man, like they're wrinkled and the pockets are all skew-width.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I was better pants.
Good
please.
Luck. I hope you get the new pants.
Me too.
I know, since you're both from Canada, are the same things funny in Canada that are funny in the United States?
You know, I think that's an interesting question. Having done Second City Main Stage Toronto and then Second City Main Stage Chicago, it's actually, I found quite different sensibilities, but in ways that you wouldn't necessarily expect. In Canada, it's self-deprecating stuff is huge. Like, we love making fun of ourselves. We love that kind of, like, you know, cutting kind of things.
Right.
And so then I came here, when I was writing shows on the main stage here, I would kind of try some of that stuff, and
it didn't play.
They didn't like it as much. They didn't like the self-deprecating about America. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's funny because we did the Women in Comedy Festival in Boston a couple years ago. Oh, and remember that one sketch? We have this great sketch. It's called Wedding Blues. And it's basically Lauren's character is just like her life. It's revealed that her life is just terrible, terrible. It keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And I'm just really distracted because I'm planning my wedding.
Oh.
And
it's based in reality. Anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely true. But in Canada, it kills. And people are like, oh my God, this is hilarious. Whatever. In America, they hated me.
They were like, oh.
Like, and everything that she said that normally gets a laugh. They were devastated. And
really?
At the end, I was like, wow, they hate me and they are devastated for you. And it was so.
So when that happens, you go back and you try to deconstruct it and figure out what's what. Do you just at some point go, well, that's just the way the nation works here? Or do you try to fix it or what?
I mean, in that case, we were doing 2 shows, and so it was like after the first one, it was like, we got to give this another shot and see, is it just that crowd? Is it that there's, you know, one kind of groaner who's taking over
ruining
the whole
it.
Audience, whatever.
Right.
With that one, it was both shows. It was so. I think if we were to do it again, then that would be something that we would probably tweak.
Yeah, maybe we would just take that sketch out completely.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that the level of compassion that we felt from America, it was beautiful. In a
way.
You know what I mean? Like back home, people are like, oh yeah, your life sucks.
Yeah, you keep on
failing. thing. And here people were like, oh, this poor woman. I thought it was actually quite lovely.
What a tale that tells about neighboring countries, though. Right? It really does. Yeah. I always noticed with stand-ups, I used to do stand-up, and the Canadian stand-ups could take their time more. It didn't have to be set up punchline. They could really weave you into a story. Norm MacDonald is perfect at that. There was a guy, Howard Busgang. I don't know if you ever saw him. But they would just take their time, where here in the States, you had to get right to it, kind of.
Yeah, that's interesting too.
We have more ADD here, I think.
Maybe that's it.
Although you're going to get more people in Canada when Trump is elected.
We were talking about this half an hour ago, yes.
Are you cool with us coming over there?
And absolutely.
The more the merrier.
We only have like a tenth of your population. And we've got room, guys.
We've got space. Come for the cold and stay for the beer. You know what I mean?
I think the next year, the 20th anniversary of Chicago Improv Festival will be in Toronto.
Yeah.
That would seem right, wouldn't it? But Trudeau's doing a good job. People seem to love him, right?
He is. He is doing a great job.
He's a rock star.
Yeah.
We do love him. We just love his he ran such a positive campaign. And Harper, for those of you who don't know, our prime minister, his name was Harper.
Our old one, yeah.
Yeah, so he was a conservative, and then the NDP is kind of the third party. They kind of went at each other, and it was their campaigns were very negative. We have nothing quite as negative as American campaign commercials.
I've seen them, and this is a different level down here.
He was just like, nope, we're rising above and positive, and then it just swept, and no one could have predicted the sweep that he took in that election.
Yeah. Amazing.
Do you laugh at us? You Canadians do laugh at what's going on with our political...
We have been laughing for a very long time, but everyone in Canada has the feeling now about it was funny and it's not funny because now it's getting
real.
Scary.
Yeah.
We were laughing until about January. And now we're like, wait a second.
It's real, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. And it's an interesting thing because it was like, I think at some point people started to realize that it was like, oh, everybody on the right, like all of the Republicans are scary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I feel like in the past, it's like whether or not wherever you land politically, great. But now it's kind of like there's no sort of just like, oh, that's like it's a Republican guy that's about like lowering taxes and
yeah,
whatever.
Republicans don't even like their guys.
This is my point. Is that it's like this, and the infighting on the left is crazy too. The Hillary supporters versus the Bernie supporters. Yep. I was like, you guys, at some point, you're gonna have to come together. Because and people are telling me, and I don't fully understand exactly how the system works here, but people are like, oh, I'm gonna go on an independent, or they're doing whatever, and I'm like, you guys might have to band together here. Like, you may have to go with like. You know,
it's startling.
If you've got, you know, it's
What better time to go and see comedy than
this? Is the
nation
time.
Is
Escape.
Failing.
This is why we do it
now while you can.
Yeah, it's all you can do, Jonathan. That's Jonathan Pitts, who runs the most incredible improv festival on the planet, the Chicago Improv Festival. Leslie Seiler from TV's Degrassi High, Lauren Ash from NBC's Superstore, all performing at the Chicago Improv Festival. Their shows tonight. Go to chicagoimprovfestival.org and all your information's there. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
And what about a pair of tickets? You're going to give away a pair of tickets. Can we do that?
Yep, absolutely.
How do you pick a number?
Caller 16 right now, 312-981-7200. If you're caller 16, you walk away with some free tickets. Thanks again, guys.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much.
A quick break, then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I like funny women.
Yeah, you know... Why wouldn't you? And it always baffles me for people who are put off by them. And why?
I don't know, but we have someone who could maybe answer that question.
That's why you're here, John.
Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, best-selling author, life coach, parenting expert, and a parent.
Yes.
And your book is The Available Parent, and it's really great. And really, I think we've moved up where, you know, men and women are equal in a lot of ways in people's minds. But a lot of guys like their women to be hot and not really funny.
it's an intimidation factor. Is that what it is?
I think so. You know, I think there's been this like renaissance in comedy for women. You know, I think certain women made it undeniable. Your Tina Fey's and your Amy Poehler's in the last like 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think there is an intimidation factor. And I think it was a whole area here in Chicago in particular where I think men felt like they really owned that whole milieu. And every once in a while, when I saw improv groups back in, you know, 20 years ago, there was one woman kind of a token just because we need a mom or a sister or a girlfriend. And now I feel like there are some really, really funny women, and there's no denying it. And that's part of it is like well, okay, we can't really pretend this isn't happening because this renaissance going on.
And the bottom line is you feel better when you laugh, because doesn't that create endorphins that go to your brain that make you feel better? So who cares who's making you laugh? Just laugh.
As long as someone's doing it.
Right. Laugh with left. That's your bumper sticker.
That's so true. John, several topics. What would you like to start with today?
One thing I've noticed in the last few months is that I'm getting calls in the morning, like early in the, before I even get to work, saying, Dr. Duffy, we have this urgency going on at home. We've got a real problem.
Sorry about all those calls.
That's okay, Wendy.
Although we haven't had those calls anymore, there have been some.
Right. But you know what I'm talking about, that this can happen. And it got me thinking, like, a lot of us have this kind of culture of crisis in our homes from the beginning of the day, you know, where it's like, you know, we can't get them out of bed. We can't get them to school. The homework's not done. Things aren't organized. And I've been thinking about, like, I wonder how we can set a different tone in our homes from the beginning of the day, whether it means like how we talk to each other, the space we create and how we use the space, but to be a little more thoughtful about how we use homes so that we're not running into crisis. Because I got to tell you, more and more often, that's what I'm running into, is this crisis from the beginning of the day, and the same families call. So it's pretty consistent, and it's really hard to kind of shake and get out of.
So just to reiterate, what the call is usually consisting of is, my child just doesn't feel like getting out of bed today, doesn't want to go to school, it just doesn't feel like today is going to be a good one and needs to stay in bed. That's the call?
That happens a lot. Or it might be, you know, he's not going to go to soccer after school, and we're already arguing about that. Or, you know,
why is that coming up in the morning?
Right. Well, it seems
I'm guilty of it, you know, because I run down, like, all right, here's what we have today. It's school, then it's CCD, then it's HeroClix. And maybe I shouldn't do that. In fact, my younger son, Dylan, said, I have, he didn't use this word, but I found out what it is, anticipatory anxiety, because I totally have it. I don't like things hanging over my head. So Dylan just said to me, tell me what I have to do when I have to do it, and then I'm not going to worry about it. Pretty smart.
What a great, like, regulatory move, right? Because there's a fine line between anticipatory anxiety and really good planning, because I get why you take that moment, because morning is sometimes the only time we're all there, right? So it's like, okay, how's today going to go? And if there's not a little space, a little time, because sometimes we just get up and we're like, okay, everybody has to hurry up and go, you know?
Right.
But if there was a little bit of time, you could have that discussion, and it could be calm. It could be like, okay, so what do you have going on today? What do I have going on today? How do we mesh this all together? And I suppose in an ideal world, maybe we do that yesterday, like last night.
Or get up earlier.
Yes. Yep.
Because that is when that starts your day, and so regularly there are fights in the morning.
Yep. And it can set a tone that I'm finding can ruin an entire day. Yep. Like the kids I see at 10 o'clock in the morning are often kids where we crashed and burned and ran into a family crisis, and now here we are kind of like trying to undo it, you know, and it's the task for the day instead of everyone going off and just having a productive, happy day. It's like starts unhappy and stressed.
Can I ask just a question? And I mean this sincerely.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of people, would you say there's a majority of people that have the old beaver cleaver days where it's like, here's your lunch, honey. Have a great day at school. Give me a kiss. And then they're out the door. I don't know that that's the majority anymore. I think it's like you're sending the kids off stressed out because you've just been arguing about something.
I think it's way more that. I think it's way more the latter, where there's a lot of stress in homes in the morning that sets the tone for the day. And that suddenly has my attention, Bill. You asked a good question at the outset, because I realize more and more and more last few months, last couple of years, that's been what I'm talking about between, you know, 8 o'clock and noon to a lot of people, is like trying to kind of like regroup from an early morning crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not always the easiest thing to bounce off of, but I'm trying to figure out, one of the suggestions is maybe get up a little bit earlier. Couldn't that add to the stress? Because then you're operating on less sleep. I wonder if that's a good
school should start at noon for teenagers. Haven't there been studies that show that? I mean,
really sound research suggests like maybe not noon, but
all right.
10 o'clock, 10:30. Yeah,
o'clock.
I mean that they're that their rhythms work very differently than ours.
Right.
And to start them at 7 or 8 is
crazy.
It's doing them a disservice, right?
I would have been a Rhodes Scholar if school started at 11 or 12.
No kidding, right?
10 o'clock would make that extra hour in the morning, or extra two would be a savior to many families, and grades would go up.
I think that's right.
How do we do this?
I don't know. We should start some kind of movement here, right?
John Duffy is here. If your kids aren't in school yet, don't worry. They have 45 more minutes before they're due. We've changed the law. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Less than 10 years ago, the iPhone changed everything, but is it time for a reboot? See where smartphones go from here. That's Thursday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Bill, I thought of you the other day because I saw all over everyone's Facebook feeds that Barack Obama, his oldest daughter, Malia, is taking a gap year. Now, I thought of you because you told me one of your daughters did that, Kylie.
Mm-hmm.
And I, honest to God, had never heard that term before. And I thought, oh, she's just going to work at Gap for a year at the Gap, make some money, and pay for college.
Right.
All right. That's
but
not
wrong.
What it is.
No.
John Duffy in the studio, Dr. John Duffy. President Barack Obama got a little backlash from mentioning this gap year, didn't he?
He did. He did. And it's kind of curious to me, like, where the judgment of this comes from, you know, because for those of us who know a little bit about gap years, it's usually you take a year and you kind of really immerse yourself in some interesting experience, some life experience that high school wouldn't provide you. And some kids do a gap year because they want that experience. Some do a gap year because they feel like, well, maturity-wise, I want another year under my belt before I do that college experience. And some kids say, like, when am I going to have the opportunity to do something really unusual like this again? So there's a lot of really cool, interesting reasons for doing this. But I also find that there's a lot of parental judgment around it. Like, your kid couldn't handle getting right into college, so you chose the gap year thing, you know?
What do other people care what you do with your kid? Why is this happening?
And why do we care what other people think about what we do with our kids?
That is the better question. Right? 'Cause it bugs me. I get texts, oh, you're a terrible mom. You know what? You love your kids. You do the best that you know how to do. How can that be bad?
It can't. You know, I am a big believer in kind of trusting your instincts regardless of what other people have to say, because we know our kids really well. And sometimes kids are drawn to something like this. I'll be curious to hear your thoughts, Bill. And it's something we parents don't even think of. And it's like, oh, I hadn't really thought of that. But if that's what you're drawn to, you know, like, I trust your instincts. That seems like a pretty good idea.
I was sure, John, when I went to school, that if someone had offered me taking a year off between high school and college, that I wouldn't have gone to college. I would have thought I could survive out in the world without taking college. I'll continue this.
That's what our parents made us think.
Well, I know myself to where I don't think I would have gone to college, but with Kylie, it really did. It changed her. It made her grow up. She was in Costa Rica for 6 weeks.
She had to grow up.
She did. She went to a foreign country where she didn't know anybody and barely spoke the language, and it changed her. And I'll tell you something that I wasn't expecting. She told me this was happening. I didn't think it would happen. Colleges really appreciated the fact that she got some life experience in. I didn't see that coming, but the fact that she did this opened up the eyes to several colleges going,
really?
We like that you did this. Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to a group of college admissions people not long ago, and I was talking to them, and then I asked them, what are you looking for? And the first thing everybody seemed to agree to was, don't bore me. Don't tell me about some lame club you did in high school once a week, you know? And a gap year is almost always a great story. I mean, like you said, Wendy, it's like this kind of trial by fire. You're gonna learn some life skills. You're going to be immersed in some different culture, undoubtedly, and do some kind of important work. And it's different. I think a generation ago, I don't think I would have gone to college either, but now I think it's part of the gap year idea is part of the culture. It's an idea that a lot of kids are considering who are very determined and absolutely college bound, you know?
I think that it's harder for a kid to go to a foreign country and be uncomfortable than it is going to a big university where there are other kids around. To me, that shows much more strength than going directly to college.
I agree. Think about the courage that takes, right?
I went to ISU for a semester. I couldn't cut the apron strings, let alone going to Guatemala or something.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. It's a good instinct that some kids have that, you know, and some kids recognize boy, if I went to ISU for a semester, I don't know if that would work out. But if I really put myself out there and I don't really have the easy option of recoiling and coming back, I'm really going to do this. I'm really going to, you know, immerse myself in this. And then college might not seem so foreboding at all. It might be like, you know, oh, this is easier.
And you know what? That breather, that 1 year breather, even though she's not just laying around, I mean, she's working and she did go to another country for a while. She needed that. There are kids who just need that. There's a lot of pressure that senior year in high school and a lot of new pressure going into college. It wasn't a bad thing for her.
It's a regulatory thing, you know, and if you look at what kids do that make them successful, it's self-regulation. And you recognize, I'm going to, you know, college right now wouldn't suit me well. I've been, you know, the all the pressure that all my friends are going through, getting in and doing all this stuff and spending more time in school and classrooms right now, that doesn't sit well with me. So I'm going to regulate. I'm going to do something different. That's something adaptive.
And you have to realize what's right for one kid is not necessarily what's right for another kid.
Absolutely. I mean, Bill, you've got twins, right? And they chose completely different paths as both of them seem to work, right? Yeah. You know, and that's a really important thing to recognize.
All right. Listener John is backing you, Bill, and you, Dr. John Duffy. Your son took a gap year, and then what happened?
Well, he took a gap year after college, and he went to China to get a job. He hasn't come back for the last 8 years. He's still there.
So it's a gap 8 years?
A gap 8 years. Yeah, he's teaching in Chinese schools.
Isn't that like a proud moment for you, though, to think, look what he's doing. He's making a difference, and he's following his passion.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I always have that parental concern about, okay, he hasn't paid into Social Security or a retirement fund.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's going to have to get started on that someday, and I don't know how that's going to work out.
Right. But in the meantime, it sounds like you're pretty proud of him for finding something that feels vocational for all this time, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We've been over to visit him a couple of times, and it's just amazing to see him do his work. So he's good.
Thank you for that lovely story. It's got to be your son is doing well in college, too, Dr. Duffy.
He is.
It's got to be such a proud moment to look at your little babies and you, Bill, too, where they're doing such wonderful things. It's got to be such a feeling of pride when you look at them standing on their own 2 feet.
Oh, sure.
There's no doubt about that, no matter what path they take. And to John's point, I've seen more and more kids in the last 5 years choose this gap year experience. Not once have I seen it break bad.
Really?
Where it wasn't a growth-oriented experience that fostered a really good college experience. John's experience is kind of unusual in that his son sounds like he really kind of embraced that experience, and that became his vocation to some extent.
Yeah, right.
But even kids who come back and start school, you know, at 19 or 20 seem to do really, really well in the wake of a gap year. I think there's a lot of maturing that happens during that year.
Now, with our caller, he said his son did it after college. Is that still technically considered a gap year? Because once you graduate.
Right.
No, after 1 year of college, I thought he said.
I think he said in the middle of college. Oh, yeah. Okay. But some people are taking a year after college.
Yeah.
I think that's a different thing. You know, I think that's kind of like, you know, I'm going to backpack through Europe before I have to be a full-on adult.
Oh, that's so when that happens
I think
after
so.
College?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing that more often than not. So I think that there's a little different vibe there. There might be some learning affiliated with it, but I think it's different at 18 than it is at 22.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. Any quick answer on to how we stop this parental bullying? It's worse than kids bullying kids.
Yeah. I think part of it is paying attention to what's going on right now. To look at, like, I don't know if anybody's seen the comments toward, like, Malia Obama about, you know, and to think, like, well, here's a kid who's just trying to do what's right for her. And to your point, Wendy, we parents are all trying to do what's right for our kids, you know, and I've worked with hundreds of parents over the years. I've yet to meet somebody where I thought, oh, you're not really well-intentioned. You don't really care about the best interests of your kids. I haven't run into that very often, you know. So I think it's like kind of just respecting other people's paths and that it's not going to be linear. And I also encourage parents not to presume that what goes on behind the door that you think is perfect is really perfect. That nothing's perfect. No family's perfect. Everybody goes through their challenges. But
when your life is in chaos, you don't think that anyone else is going through what you're going through. And so, my life hasn't been in chaos, but there are families that have it.
Definitely.
And you think, oh, there's that one family who's they never fight. Everything's perfect. Dinner's on the table at 5 o'clock. The dog is freshly bathed. Is there any perfect household, really?
No. And wouldn't it be boring? You know, yes. And I mean that sincerely. Like, wouldn't that be a drab household? You know, like, I think the challenges are part of what makes families, creates the fabric of a family and what makes them interesting. You know, a perfect household is way, way overrated. And I don't think it exists at all.
The Cleavers didn't have that much fun.
No.
No.
No. No.
Haskell was having fun.
The Haskell
family. You're absolutely right.
To be. That's Dr. John Duffy. Go to drjohnduffy.com. And again, his book is The Available Parent. Thank you, John. Great
Thank
to see
you. Guys.
You.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a quick gap ourselves, and then Kim Gordon will give you the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. Can I tell you about something that exists that I heard about it this morning, and I said, well, this doesn't exist. This is impossible. They don't really have these. And then I looked it up online. Several sources all say that it's real, but I find it impossible to believe that this is real. Do you want to know what it is?
No. Thanks for coming. All right. What are we going to say? Yeah, of course.
All right. Again, I'm going to preface this by saying you'll think that this is fake because it sounds fake and it looks fake, but it's not fake. An Indiana town has installed two safe haven. I'm sorry, I'll say that correctly now.
Bill Leff, take two. Interesting story.
An Indiana town has installed two safe haven baby boxes in which mothers have the option to drop off their unwanted infants anonymously. This is a little box. I'm going to say, I want to get the exact dimensions. Maybe it says it later in the story.
I like the safe haven rule
and
the law, and it's out there.
I do too.
And currently it's you can drop off a baby at a hospital, a fire department, a police station, but I don't think you put them in a box.
These boxes are just a little bit larger than a standard microwave oven. Just a little bit bigger, and they have a slot, much like you would go, like if you were dropping off a package or mail. They have a slot that you would insert the baby into, and then the baby would slide down into the box, and you would close it.
Okay, this is really weird. And how long do you microwave a baby?
People have different opinions. The boxes are climate controlled, they're padded, and they feature a security system that alerts all nearby emergency service workers when a baby is placed in one, just according to the Associated Press. Presumably, the babies are placed in the safe haven box and will be then tended to much quicker than if parents discard them in a different manner, which we don't want. Nobody wants that.
And, you know, there was that U of I student that was just in the news recently who gave birth in the dorm bathroom and then suffocated her baby, allegedly, carried it around in her backpack, and completely denied the fact that she ever was pregnant, that she had a baby. So for sure, we would rather have this than something like that.
This is a better option, but I'm not sure it's the right option.
No.
The Woodburn.
What if there are two babies, two people that want to get rid of babies at the same time?
I'm hoping it's not happening with that much frequency.
Keep your babies.
There does need to be some sort of a solution for people who is it a hospital or a post office that in the past they've allowed this sort of thing?
No, I said the hospitals. It's a safe haven law. Hospitals,
right. Office too, or am I imagining that?
You don't mail a baby.
I'm not saying to mail it, just to drop it off.
I think it's police stations, fire department. I'll look it up, but I didn't know it was the post. You got all the most wanted people there.
The Woodburn Volunteer Fire Department, which is less than 20 miles from the Ohio border, received the first baby box in the state recently, while a second one was then installed in Michigan City. That happened on Thursday. Woodburn's baby box is directly attached to the inside of the firehouse, costing between $1,500 and $2,000. The state's Knights of Columbus organization is paying the bill for the first of 100 planned baby box installations. Every state, as well as Washington, D.C., have safe haven laws in place that say infants can be given up by the parents legally without any fear of persecution. Some, like in Indiana, allow mothers to drop babies off at hospitals as well as police stations and fire stations. Then they show a picture of it, and again, it's roughly the size of a larger microwave oven. But knowing that there's some sort of an alert system makes me feel slightly better. like within seconds, they get some sort of a red alert saying there's a baby in there.
All right. Well, I feel better after looking at the picture because, as you mentioned, it's connected to a building. I thought it was just a box, like
an Amvets box or something.
Right.
Remember those?
Or when you go to pay your water bill and you can just it's like away from the building and you just put it in the slot. This is like a built-in incubator in the side of a building.
Yeah.
Wow.
It still makes me, as I look at pictures of it, I know the whole situation is uneasy. Because there's a lot of, it's a sad, sad story. If somebody has decided, I can't tend for my own child, and you have to somehow, I don't want to say get rid of it, because that sounds like you're destroying it.
Some of these people are getting rid of it. I mean, because if you have a support group and a family and you say, I am pregnant and I don't want to be and I can't take care of this baby.
Right.
A lot of times the families will get together and help and go through adoption agencies. These seem to be girls who are not telling their families that they're pregnant, and then they're panicking when the baby comes out. And to date, all 50 states have enacted the safe haven legislation.
Right.
They will not be punished or no criminal charges if you just abandon your baby, which in the past you would have had trouble with.
Yeah.
We have a phone call. This is Joan. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Joan, what do you know about this?
Well, in other cultures, my experience was with Korea, and I know that they have had those. My daughter's 39. I adopted her from Korea. And she was placed in a box. People there have children. Boys are like their social security card, so they will have a baby in hopes of having a boy if they have a girl. And I don't know that this hasn't changed over the years, but this is the way it was. If they had a girl, they would then give it up for adoption.
Or abandon the baby, it sounds like.
Well, it sounds like abandonment, but, it's a different culture, and they couldn't afford it. And it, for all these people that are marching around with signs saying, God forbid they should have an abortion, this seems like a nice alternative.
Look at you. You're the proof of that. 39 years with a great daughter.
No kidding.
Joan, did they...
I mean...
So how did you learn of this story? Did you know this going in, or how were you made aware that this was your daughter's
More history? Through our social worker. When it came to adopting... They said, do you want a boy or a girl? And we said we didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, well, girls are a lot easier to get since blah, blah, blah. And then after that, I, for the reason I just stated to you.
Yeah.
And then I did some research on it myself, and that's what I found out.
There are so many people who can't have babies that if this box works... It's going to make people like Joan very happy.
I guess so.
I was just one of 30 people picking up a child that day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we got her when she was, we got a picture of her when she was 5 months old and actually picture up in my arms when she was 7 months old.
Oh, that's so
beautiful.
Sweet.
Well, Joan, mm-hmm. thank you. We value your expertise in this. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like they've been doing these boxes in
other countries.
I do feel much better that it's not a standalone box. I really thought it was just like a
mailbox or something. Yeah,
like you explained. Hey, or put your old shoes and clothes in this drop box.
Yeah. It's the darndest thing. I understand the value of it. It seems almost inhumane. I mean, like I said before, every part of this is semi-tragic. It can have a happy ending, like we just heard. It would just be a weird process to pull up alongside one of these boxes and insert a baby into one. Do you know what I mean?
Well, because we're not used to it. It's weird, but it's weirder to kill your baby and carry it around in a backpack.
Yeah, way weirder.
Hi, Frank.
Hi.
You have an abandoned baby story?
Many years ago, after the Safe Haven law went into effect, I was working at a firehouse when Saturday morning, a woman came in with a newborn in her arms, and she had two other toddlers with her that were hanging on to her legs, and she came walking in and said in broken English, she was Spanish, that she wanted to give up her baby. And we just thought that she was kind of overwhelmed with the two that she had, and this was something that she felt she had to do. It's a lot safer than, you know, some of the alternatives. And then I'd say within 2 weeks of when she abandoned that baby, someone from the adoption agency that handles those babies came into the firehouse and asked us if we were interested in writing letters to that infant that would go into their file, and then when they're of age, 18 years old, they would have access to them.
Did you do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even imagine what it would be like to have to give up your baby.
Oh, sure.
I can't imagine that. I understand these boxes because you don't have to talk to anyone. Like, this woman had to come in and talk to you, Frank, and it's probably harder. If you could just drop a baby in a box that's connected to a fire department,
The thing about, I don't know how those boxes are monitored. I don't know what the plan is with the box, but at least if you're handing the baby to someone in a firehouse, there's some degree of medical care there.
Like,
right,
the first thing that we're required to do is to call an ambulance right away, and we turn the baby over to paramedics, and the baby goes to the hospital, and because you have to rule out if there's any type of abuse so that the baby's been treated properly. But it's completely anonymous. The woman is left with some information as to what hospital the baby went to, because then there's some time frames in terms of the law, her rights to come back and claim that baby, or she loses all rights to that baby. And there's, I forget what the time frame is for that, but it is completely anonymous, and the baby does go for medical care immediately to make sure that the baby's okay.
Yeah.
See, that's what I was wondering is, do you say to the mother, do you want to leave your name, address, phone number in case you change your mind? Is that a factor in this? Can you do that, or are you not allowed to do that?
No, it's not a question of taking their name, but what we do give them is information as to where the baby has been taken, like what hospital.
Okay.
I forget, but the law is very clear on what the time frame is as to what she has to do if she wants to reassert her parental rights or when those rights go away. But it's all designed to protect the infant.
Sure.
Absolutely.
It should be.
Well, great work there, Frank. Thank you for sharing that story. We have to take a quick break. We have some texters who have something we should watch if we're more interested in this, and more calls. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We are talking about the first baby drop-off boxes.
They're in Woodburn, Indiana. There's two of them, and their plan is to eventually have 100 of them. The local Knights of Columbus organization is paying the bill for these planned baby box installations.
A bunch of people have texted us. There is a movie called The Drop Box, and you can go to thedropboxfilm.com. It says more than 250,000 saw the theatrical release of The Drop Box and want to help orphans and adoptive families sign up to learn more through email updates and receive a free gift. I don't know what the free gift is. And then somebody said, 815, my grandmother was abandoned 100 years ago in Italy. There's nothing new about it. She was left in a wheel right near a convent. That's not as good as a baby box.
Wow. For some reason in my head, and I don't know why, but it seems like a thing that probably happened years ago, that it was much more prevalent. But no, if it's happening with this much frequency right here in the United States, something needs to be done. I'm not sure this is
uncomfortable with the mode.
And I shouldn't be, because it is, I mean, it's certainly a better alternative than the story you told about the girl who sadly
girl,
took her own
smart,
child's life.
Just that's total denial.
There's nothing worse than that.
No.
But for some reason, as I look at this, it just seems, although I'm comforted in the fact that there is an alert system that as soon as you were to place a baby in this, the property authorities would be alerted immediately. So it's not like the baby would spend a significant amount of time in the box.
No, it's connected to the fire department, isn't it? I thought you read that. And plus, if it's monitored, and come on, there's going to be cameras all over that. They're going to go, oh, right. Fresh baby in.
There's somebody in there. Right. Right, right, right.
Someone, 313, has texted us, on the one hand, this is better than killing the baby, but on the other hand, further outlets for irresponsibility. Get rid of consequences of bad behaviors. Having sex isn't necessarily a bad behavior, and you can say, you know, preach abstinence to your kids and, hey, got to get on birth control, but, you know, accidents happen.
Sure.
I mean, sure. You can talk till you're blue in the face and things happen, and we're trying to figure out a solution. Joe, we only have about a minute here, but you wanted to share a story with us?
Yeah, you know what? They need to, just like the last texter said, they need to take care of this before the box syndrome or whatever you want to call this box that they're putting out there. They need to stop because I see it. I'm involved in it. I see that it's the people that are doing this, most of them are multiple offenders. They have multiple kids. The state sees this. I'm talking state of Illinois. I don't know about other states, but girls that are having babies, one, two, three, four of them. We're involved in one that we've had this baby for 4 years now. Can't get the mother to sign paper, but she's with us 98% of the time.
Joe,
I don't understand what you mean.
Really quick? You said you're involved in it. How are you involved in it?
Well, this was the mother's first baby.
No. How are you involved? Do you work at an adoption agency?
We're taking care of the baby.
Like a foster?
We have the baby. Yes, we're like a foster family, we're not fosters. We got involved in it by my daughter going to school with this girl in freshman year of high school and her coming to school pregnant, asking us to watch the baby overnight one night, and it ended up being 5 nights. And it just continued from there. And since then, she's had two more. One, which she, right from the hospital, let our best friends adopt the baby.
Yeah.
Where is this girl's mom or dad?
Well, the dad, I couldn't tell you. The mother is no better.
Oh, my God.
If you want to go that route. Yeah. It's you know, and here we're providing for this baby, giving her a good life, school, you name it. But yet we can't legally do anything.
That's awful. That's really awful.
You're a good man.
Awful isn't even a word for it.
No, I know.
You're a very good man, Joe.
But they have to stop this before it gets to this point and stop all these young kids and even older women, whatever it is, that are having one, two, three of them that are being adopted or being, you know, put in foster homes and everything else. You know what? It gets to a point to where a man gets a vasectomy. If a girl's had more than one and it's out of wedlock or whatever.
Tubes tied, maybe.
Tied to tubes. You know.
There's
you
something to
but,
be said.
But to force, I don't, can I know, you force
but
somebody
I,
to do that?
It's different if somebody has a child that they didn't expect, but to be continually doing it, it seems like something should be done. I don't know if that's it.
Bill, you just said you can't force somebody to do that, but yet you're forcing the taxpayers to pay for that.
Yeah, I know. It's,
you know what I mean?
It's hard to resolve.
Coming out of my pocket, your pocket,
yes,
and everybody that's out there working.
Joe, we got to run. Thanks for sharing that, and good luck with that baby.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
All right. A quick break, then Steve Bertrand will be by with the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Former RNC Chairman Michael Steele is here to gird us for a Trump presidency.
What, darling? Say it a little louder. We can't hear you.
Plus, we'll give away tickets to see two of the world's greatest soccer teams play at Soldier Field.
The Rokan Show girds us this afternoon.
With a huge in-stock selection and free shipping, you'll get the biggest savings of the year. So call now, 312-883-7800. Check their in-stock availability or visit officedesigns.com. Don't miss out on your opportunity to save 15%. Call 312-883-7800 or visit officedesigns.com. The tone you heard means it's 1 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. The news is sponsored by Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating. Here's Kim Gordon.
Cloudy and 50 at O'Hare. John Kasich is getting out of the Republican race for president. The Ohio governor is expected to make a statement this afternoon from his home state. ABC's Ben Gittleson has more.
Probably the greatest impetus for John Kasich to decide to suspend his campaign was Ted Cruz's decision yesterday to suspend his own campaign. And the fact of the matter is, John Kasich currently trails Donald Trump by hundreds of delegates. It's mathematically impossible for him to clinch the nomination. It's a lot easier for Donald Trump to do so.
Donald Trump now becomes the presumptive Republican nominee. And former Illinois Republican Party Chairman Pat Brady says he will never vote for Donald Trump. Brady says it's unfair to compare Trump to former President Ronald Reagan.
He spent 15, 20 years traveling around the country listening to people, articulating the conservative message and refining it. And he came out in 64, which was too early when Goldwater came out. But by the time he ran, he had the message down. So it was decades of dedication to conservative principles versus Donald Trump, whose biggest donations in this state have been to Illinois Democrats.
Brady tells the Steve Cochran Show Trump isn't truly a Republican. With the Lucas Museum project possibly on its way out of Chicago, Mayor Emanuel is stepping up the push to keep it here. He says Friends of the Parks and flexibility makes it tough.
When a group in the morning files a case one way and then speaks in the afternoon in direct contradiction to the spirit and the letter of the filing at the court case, it's hard to see them as consistent partners.
Yesterday, the group agreed to a stay over their lawsuit against the city, but then said they won't accept a lakefront location. President Obama's in Flint to talk with residents about how they're doing after the lead contaminated their drinking water. The president's first order of business is to be briefed on the federal response to the crisis. We're learning more about the Navy SEAL killed during a gun battle in Iraq earlier this week. The military says Navy Petty Officer First Class Charles Keating was part of a quick reaction force that moved in to help American military advisors who came under ISIS attack. Police are investigating a possible hate crime at the University of Iowa.
Iowa police say 19-year-old freshman Marcus Owens of Naperville was beaten and called racial slurs by at least one white man in a downtown alley Saturday night. Owens reported the incident Monday. Reports say he was treated for damage to his lip and eye socket, and his front teeth were knocked out. Police are gathering information on possible suspects, and the university says it's deeply disturbed by the report. Mary Vandeveld, WGN News.
U of I students will have another required class to take. All Urbana-Champaign students will now take a course in U.S. minority culture. The campus senate approved the change earlier this week after a debate about race and diversity. Your money, sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Hi. This is our second show of the day, or part two, depending on
second
how you
show.
Slice it. Is it the second show? It's the second show, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
You know, come on. We have to build up the momentum, and usually right. That happens after we're off the air.
That's true. That's true. I lost a bet with myself today. Did you ever do that?
You have a gambling problem.
You've done this at some point, though. You think, I know the way something works. I'll make a bet with myself. You know, it doesn't have to be for money. It could be, you know, just for fun or for candy if you want. But I bet myself, and I think you'll appreciate this, being the White Sox fan that you are, we received some sad news yesterday that a longtime member of the White Sox, John Danks, will no longer pitch for the Chicago White Sox.
And you know what really bummed me out is I'm Facebook friends with him.
Are
so
you
what do
friends
I
with
say?
John Danks? That's
yeah,
fantastic.
You know, a lot of the famous people that I am friends with on my Facebook page was when it came out and you made friends right away and then you got a 5,000 limit.
Oh, right. Right.
So I was going to send him a little, I'm so sorry to see you go.
Yeah.
He's young.
He is young. He's relatively young.
31 or 4.
Yeah, very early 30s. Very early 30s. He's pitched for the White Sox for 10 years, had some good seasons, but sadly.
A shoulder injury has not done him well.
Right. So he will no longer be pitching for the Chicago White Sox. And I was positive that one of our two papers, or both, that the headline would read, Danks for the Memories.
Oh.
I was positive either the Tribune or the Sun-Times.
They're going to try and hire you now.
I'll take that job.
Are they the same company anymore? I don't even know what's going on with the newspaper.
Nobody tells us. But the White Sox, it says here in the Sun-Times, odd man out, which is okay.
Mm. Okay.
It's okay. And then the Tribune goes with Danks yanked, which is none of our business, really. But I thought Danks for the Memories would have been a very fitting goodbye to John Danks, but neither paper went for it, and I lost a bet.
Can I tell you why you need to be on Twitter for that reason entirely?
You know what? Bruce Wolf told me the same thing yesterday. What's your reason?
All right. Well, Bruce Wolf at least has gotten some mentions because of that.
He has a lot of them, hasn't he?
But when you have something clever and quippy,
yeah,
you get it out there before other people
but
do.
That's what I like to think we use the show for as a platform, is I would rather save it up and come in and have
do both.
Or, yeah,
say it on the show first and then tweet it. Not everybody on,
yeah,
on Twitter, as Arianna Huffington calls it,
right,
listens to the show, although they should.
Right, right. All right, now I have to ask you this, because I'm unclear on this. Has John Kasich officially pulled out, or has he not pulled out? Because I can't...
That's his own private business, isn't it?
I don't know what the answer is to that. I don't know if he's in or is he out.
Well, here's the thing. We're doing a changing of the guards right now
in
the
newsroom. All right, so nobody official can speak with us right now.
But now I thought we heard that he has suspended his campaign as well.
That's what I thought too, but now I'm hearing contrary.
Now I'm just hearing expected to, but
right.
I thought it was official.
That's what I thought too.
Let me go to the old Googler.
I give him credit because... Really?
You know what I give him credit for?
Huh.
He waited till Cruz backed out first. That's what I give
him
credit
for. There is something to be said for that. When this whole thing started and there were 17 different Republicans stepping up on not one but two stages, because in those early days of the debates, they didn't have room on the stage for 17. So you had the major debate and then you had the undercard or the children's table.
Right.
And he was the guy I had never heard of.
Me neither. Until
I didn't
the
know who
end.
He was. Yeah.
Last three standing.
Right. Right. But in the very beginning, I went, oh, I know who that guy is. I know who that guy is. I've heard of that guy. I kind of know who she is. But John Kasich was the one that I said, boy, I really don't know much about him. And I thought some of his messages were pretty good.
When you got to know who he was, he didn't seem like a bad candidate.
Right. He seemed extremely authentic and legitimate, which you could argue the other candidates don't always seem, but I kind of liked him. And there was a time where I thought,
me too.
I could see him. That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if
I
John Kasich was president.
I have flopped back and forth a million times. I really have.
Yeah.
I like Hillary for some reasons.
Yep. Bernie Sanders.
I like
for
Bernie
some reasons.
For some reasons.
Yeah.
Cruz, I never liked.
Hard to like him.
Especially after he punched his wife.
3 times in 4 seconds.
Again, if you haven't seen the video, and Bill pointed this out to me today, last night after his concession speech?
It was.
He had a wonderfully long embrace with his wife.
Yep.
And then all went south.
Yes.
He saw his father.
Yes.
He tried to break the embrace. It's always bad to have to be the first one to break the embrace, too.
That could have been better choreographed.
Yes. But
doesn't it show you, one of the knocks on him is how awkward he is.
Totally
and
awkward.
He is a very awkward human being. And I think that those 4 seconds showed in a nutshell just how awkward he is. I'm sure, I don't know how many times you and your husband have embraced, I'm guessing in the thousands. I would say the same for my wife and I, somewhere in the thousands. And I bet some have gone better than others, but I've never popped her 3 times in a 4 second time limit ever.
As he ended the long embrace with his wife, Ted Cruz saw his dad, and that's what ended the embrace. And he went.
He said,
to
"There's
hug
the
his
man
dad.
Who killed Kennedy. I must hug him. That man killed John F. Kennedy. I must hug him now."
Ooh, ooh! Who killed the Kennedys?
Ted Cruz's dad.
And so when he ended the embrace and went to hug his father, he elbowed his wife in the face, then punched her.
Yes.
And then I can't tell if it's an elbow or fist the third time.
Yeah.
But then they did a group embrace, a group hug.
Right. Well, because at that point, he felt terrible.
But I'm telling you, you've got to Google it if you haven't seen it, ladies and gentlemen.
Can we put it on
boys
our Facebook page, Kevin? Is that possible?
Yeah.
With a some sort of a warning, because it's very violent. It's extremely violent.
It's
and
so,
I don't want to give any.
It is not.
I don't want to give future presidential candidates any ideas that that's the way you do things, because it isn't. But the look on Heidi Cruz's face
that's
after the
I'm
first
saying.
One was bad. After the by the third one, she's like, ugh.
But that's
what's this?
That is a wife's face. I would say once a day, but maybe that's too much.
I hope that's too much.
But there are those looks from the wives that are like, oh God.
I've seen it all. I've done it all, and now this.
I know.
What a way to exit.
Although, where is Steve Bertrand defending? Ted Cruz that, you know, it's an awkward moment and we should, sorry, you just took a bite of your sandwich. He doesn't even have his headphones.
All that was missing was, remember on Batman in the 60s when Batman and Robin would be fighting the henchmen of King Tut or Mr.
Pow.
Freeze?
Yes.
Pow, zap, bam.
Kablooey.
That's all that was missing is those colorful words coming out at us through the screen.
That's another reason you need to be on Twitter, because you could make a little cartoon right now.
All right,
didn't
maybe.
You feel for Heidi at
yes.
all? And you know, because
yes.
she's smart woman.
Yes.
Stood by her husband while he was being pummeled, and
right.
she gets it.
She didn't, you know, the way you guys made it sound, I thought she was going to have two black eyes, you know, when you get hit yeah. in the nose.
No one has seen her this morning. Where is
she still alive?
I don't know. No one has seen her this morning.
All right. And Bill posed a question that, you know, has John Kasich officially dropped out? According to CNN several minutes ago, John Kasich is dropping out of the Republican presidential race. Two sources familiar with the plan confirmed to CNN.
All right.
You know, you've got to. I'm your newsman, so I can answer
this. Well, you weren't
questions.
Here when we started talking about this.
Two sources are confirming that John Kasich will withdraw from the race.
And that happens when, Steve?
No, so he.
Thanks for repeating exactly what I said.
That was the point.
I know.
He had some events in Virginia today, and he abruptly canceled them, and the campaign said he would make a statement from Columbus, Ohio at 4 o'clock our time. So, you know, anytime you get pummeled and then you cancel and then you go home,
yeah,
those are all very clear indications. And, yeah, it's been widely reported now that he will suspend his campaign, too.
But he is the last rational man standing.
I think so. On the Republican
yeah.
side.
Yeah. And, I mean, seriously, yeah. it means something that he let Trump go out. He let Ted Cruz go out first.
Yeah. Steve, traditionally, when something like this happens and somebody, and I will throw this both Ted Cruz's way last night and then John Kasich's way today, is it the campaign manager who has a sit down with the candidate, or is the candidate who says to them, look, I'm not terrible at math. I've added up the numbers. I can't win this thing. Who says to who it's time to pull the plug?
I think it probably varies by candidate. You know, there's some.
Don't
candidates-
you just look in your wallet?
And see if it's empty or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a good point. That did happen with some of the earlier people who were running out of money. But
yeah.
At this point, you know, I don't think Kasich's spending a lot of money. And, you know, Bernie Sanders is one. Bernie Sanders has a lot of money. He's not going to win the nomination. At least it doesn't look like he is. But he keeps going as well to make a point and to build his crowd.
If Ted Cruz hadn't gone all in Indiana as he did, would that be a different story? Would he still be running, or is it
well,
just...
Well, he had to stop him somewhere, and yeah. that was the best state that lined up for him, for Cruz,
yeah.
to stop him. You know, it wasn't like New York or some of the northeastern states where Cruz had Trump had a great advantage. So mm-hmm. it's sort of like if he was going to stop him, in Indiana in his way was his ace on the mound.
Yeah, I guess so.
And if the ace wasn't going to stop him, he wasn't going to be
yeah.
stopped.
Right.
All right, well, there are people defending Ted Cruz, saying he accidentally, all caps, hit his wife.
Without a doubt, it was accidental. I'm not suggesting
exactly.
his game plan was to go up there.
309 says better than a Leslie Nielsen movie. Someone else says, my husband used to elbow me in the head like that, and notice how she's kind of out of the circle a little bit when they all embraced.
Yeah.
My divorce was final on Monday.
Oh,
LOL.
No. Oh, no.
And there was someone else. Oh, once I was doing the hokey pokey at a wedding, and I elbowed my wife right in the forehead hard.
Well,
you're supposed to put your elbow in, not in your wife's head.
Right. Listen to the lyrics. It says so in the lyrics. All right. We have to take a break, and then we have a whole bunch coming up on the show. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Plan your home improvement and DIY projects Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini at 10:30, followed by Weekend Workbench at 11.
Can't speak for you on this.
Uh-oh, you can't speak for
yourself.
I can't
speak for
either
of us on this. In a weird way, I'm going to miss Ted Cruz.
Why?
In a weird way. I just think it's the way... He had a way of explaining things that was so unique.
Something in the way...
He explained things, or tried to explain things.
He punches.
For instance, yes. For instance, he went off a couple of days ago on Donald Trump, and he made a very strange comparison, and I'm a movie fan, but I wouldn't have figured this out, but Ted Cruz did figure this out, that in a lot of ways, Donald Trump, to him anyway, is much like the character of Biff in Back to the Future 2. Now, that's kind of a stretch, but let him explain it. This is Ted Cruz from just a couple short days ago. Listen.
The screenwriter says that he based the character Biff Tannen on Donald Trump. A caricature of a braggadocious, arrogant buffoon who builds giant casinos with giant pictures of him everywhere he looks. We are looking, potentially, at the Biff Tannen presidency. I don't think the people of America want that. I don't think we deserve that. I don't think Hoosiers want that.
Senator, these are some of the strongest.
All right, you can pull it there.
Did Biff have casinos?
I'm trying to remember. I remember the first Back to the Future very well, and then 2 and 3 kind of just blend
there
together
was
in my
three?
Head. Oh, yeah. They made three of them. They made three Back to the Futures. But mostly, when you're running for president, you're not pulling out. I mean, I've made a career so far out of pulling out obscure references from pop culture, but he wanted to be the president, and he's comparing Donald Trump to Biff from Back to the Future 2.
But see, that's the thing. Hillary's accused of not being relatable. Trump is, I keep messing him up. Cruz is trying so hard to be relatable, but with really bad analogies.
It's a strange way to go about things. It really is.
And he also brought up the Hoosiers thing when he was in Indiana. Do we have that audio?
It's the same height as it is in, you know, the amazing thing is that basketball ring here in Indiana, it's the same height.
The basketball ring.
Somebody said he said rim. He did not. He said ring.
He said ring.
Yeah. And rim is wrong, too.
It's more correct than ring. Like,
it's not the quote. If you're going to quote something, because otherwise you'd have to go, I'm paraphrasing something.
Right. Right. But if you grew up in America.
I did.
Don't you know it's a basketball hoop? Or
yes.
You know that, don't you?
What are you saying? He didn't grow up in America? He grew up on another planet?
I don't know where he grew up. I'm not sure where he grew up. So I know it sounds strange to say this, but in a weird way, I'll miss him. I'm thrilled he's not going to be the president. I couldn't be happier.
I know you don't watch Talking Dead with Chris Hardwick, but at the end of Walking Dead episodes and Fear the Walking Dead, he does this little in memoriam of the people that passed away, and there's this lovely music swell when they show the walkers that have died or whatever, and that's what I'm hearing in my head as we say so long to Ted Cruz.
Well, it wasn't that long ago, I'm not exaggerating here, where there were 17 candidates, and it was just a couple short months ago, and then one by one, the bubbles just popped, and you're left with the one that I thought was the least likely.
I thought he'd be out right away.
I thought he'd be the first one out. I swear to you, I would have bet everything Donald Trump would be the first one out, not the last man standing.
Was this the record-breaking year of how many people were running on the Republican side?
Yeah.
17.
Yeah.
Good God, y'all.
Yeah. So one by one, they all went away. Even the ones that everybody said, I remember when Bush entered it, everybody goes, well, that's the guy.
Bush?
That's the guy, yeah. Jeb Bush. Everybody goes,
that's... Oh, God, I completely forgot he was running. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
There was a great quote when he announced, they said, the adults just entered the room.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Oh, God, I completely forgot Jeb Bush was even in the running.
So how unlikely.
Well, it turns out he really wasn't.
Yeah, you're right. How could I forget that, though? They made such fun of him on SNL and everywhere.
So just to paraphrase, the Cubs are the best team in baseball, and Donald Trump is just one step away from being the president of the United States.
The White Sox are
the best team. The White Sox are the best team in the American League. But if you look at everybody's record, all 30 baseball teams, it's the Cubs. The Cubs are they're the odds-on favorite in Las Vegas to be the World Series champions, and Donald Trump is running for the presidency, and he's the front runner for one of the two political parties.
He's not. He can't win.
Yep. You've been saying that for 10 months now.
I just don't see it. Although we had that poll earlier.
Once it's down to two, like when it's a bigger field, you go, yeah, well, that's going to be tough to get there. But now it's down to two. He's one of two people.
And he doesn't play by any conventional rules.
None.
Which means there's no preparing a defense.
Right.
You know, and we were talking earlier about things don't stick to him the way they stick to other people.
Teflon Don.
He's the new Teflon Don.
Yep.
Yep. He is. All right.
Or Teflon Don Jr. I just really believe that if he does win, I'm not moving to Canada. I'm not moving anywhere. I'm not. I like my job. I like my house, my family, my dog. But I am going to just...
Throw that in.
That's
just
in the job.
That in. Yeah.
But I mean, I am just going to wait and see. And who knows? Maybe he'll turn this country around. Maybe he'll
I believe that part's true.
Exactly how it happens.
That's how it happens.
What are we going to do? We have to, know. You know?
All right. We've got a lot more for you coming up. So stay here. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder on WGN. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune to help us digest the events of the day, what's going on politically. And as we said when you walked in, Kristen, there's really nothing to discuss this
time
around.
Nothing. You know, if you guys want to talk meatloaf recipes, right, maybe we could do that.
Need a new meatloaf recipe.
No, John Kasich is scheduled a press conference for 5 p.m. Where he is going to announce that he is suspending his campaign. I'm sure you've heard that.
Yeah.
So now we're down to Trump as the presumptive nominee. I'm not even sure why they keep saying presumptive. I guess just in case. Presumptive. There you go. I like that.
See why I have Twitter?
Right. That'll get a billion
tweets.
Take
credit for it. Take credit for it. So, yeah, I mean, Trump won every county in Indiana yesterday except for five. Hillary Clinton did not do so well, so we still have this little surge. Bernie Sanders is, like, hanging on like a dog with a bone, even though the numbers just don't add up for him.
Was that surprising, those results? I mean, Cruz was expecting success in Indiana. What about Hillary?
I was surprised, actually, that Hillary did not do better. I didn't think that the progressive Democrats of Indiana were as to the left of you know, as Bernie Sanders is.
Yeah.
So I was surprised. She's moved on. She didn't spend any time campaigning there. So maybe that had something to do with it. And she's already focused. She's in Ohio now. She's focusing on the general. She's focusing on Trump. And so she's just kind of letting Bernie Sanders have this one last gasp. But he's done, you know.
He's making it uglier, though, now, isn't it? There's a bad side of Bernie Sanders coming out, just really talking, disgracing Hillary Clinton, which I didn't see really at the beginning.
But they all reached that level semi-desperation where they have to try something different. And maybe being that aggressive isn't their best answer, is it?
It's not. But I think when you're desperate to move numbers, that happens. I mean, look at what Donald Trump did Tuesday morning before the Indiana primary, trying to link Ted Cruz's father to Lee Harvey Oswald.
Right. Because in the Inquirer,
right,
which was right about OJ. I'll give him that.
Yeah, they have been right about a couple of things, but the
Elvis's death, they were right about that.
Well, they also reported that Bruce Jenner and Elvis had a gay love affair.
Oh,
that
they
was
did?
A recent cover.
I didn't know that.
That Hillary Clinton is dying of brain cancer. That OJ actually only has 4 more days to live.
Oh
yeah,
no.
I saw that.
So I mean, they're not exactly the most reputable news source.
But what a great way, because we've seen Ted Cruz, especially when other people are attacking his wife, it's fine. But when he decks her, then it's a different story. But that's the best way to mess with Ted Cruz, is to pick on somebody close to him. So the timing on that was actually pretty good, wasn't it?
It got him fired up.
Yeah.
It sure did, because you're right. There was some criticism of his daughters who appeared in an early campaign ad. Boy, you saw Ted come out fight, and you saw
right.
that Texas side of him. And yeah, you don't go after his father. I mean,
right.
his father is, you know, a minister. So it's a little distasteful.
And his mom was assistant to Benito Mussolini. Most people know that, right? That's common knowledge at this point,
it
right?
It is, right.
Don't you just leave that alone? I feel like you give credence to it if you address it. Like, just go, this is... Instead, he's quoting wrong lines from movies. And, if we could go back before you came in, Ted Cruz was talking about Biff Tannen from Back to the Future 3.
Oh, no.
2.
I'm sorry, 2. Yeah. Yes. I was shocked to know there was a 3.
Yeah.
And we wondered if Biff Tannen actually did have a casino. And I need to clarify, he had the Biff Tannen's Pleasure Paradise Casino with a statue out front of himself in Back to the Future 2. And in Back to the Future 2, Biff got the idea to bet on sports from his older self by betting on the Cubs to win the World Series. And look what's going on right now.
Doesn't it all tie together?
Wow.
So Cruz is not that off.
Except that he called a basketball hoop a ring.
Yeah.
Basketball ring. So, you know, as soon as that happened, you're down for the count in Indiana. You can't get away with that.
What a bad state to whip out the wrong quote.
Yeah,
that
was unfortunate.
So embarrassing.
All right. I asked Steve Bertrand this, and we discussed it a little bit, but I would love to get your take. When one of the candidates makes the realization it's not going to happen, Ted Cruz did this yesterday, and John Kasich is about to do this today, what goes on behind the scenes? Is it a campaign manager who sits down in a room with just them and the candidate, or is it the candidate who comes in and says to everybody, look, we gave it our best, but it's not meant to be? How does that play out normally?
I think it's a combination. With John Kasich, some of the news reports are already saying that he was actually getting on an airplane this morning to fly out to D.C. for some fundraisers.
Yeah.
And he kind of just had this moment on his own on the plane and had the airplane turn around and taxi back to the airport. And he just called in a couple advisors and just said, my heart is not in this anymore.
Yeah.
And they said, if your heart's not in it, you got to get out. You can't devote this type of energy and resources and staff and all these people who need to get on with their lives. So I think it's a combination with Ted Cruz. He has had such a good ground game of knowing where he needed delegates. And when the math wasn't there, I think he too realized it's time to just move on.
Yeah. You're not shocked that he's not he's not going to throw his support to Donald Trump. That's not a surprise, is it?
Well, it's early. You know, they had a pretty rough go of it in these past few weeks. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point Cruz comes around. I mean,
really?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely, I don't know what sort of credential he will hold, how much endorsements really are going to matter in the end. But
what's in it for him to do that? Why would he do that?
Because they honestly run all these months promising to unify the party. And what Ted Cruz doesn't want more than Trump to be president is for Hillary Clinton to be president. I mean, he is a policy-oriented guy. I think he takes issue with a lot of Hillary Clinton's policies. And the idea that he might be able to block her from getting into the White House would be enough for him to encourage his supporters to get behind Trump. There is a little talk of like a third party somehow emerging.
I thought it was too late.
I think it's too late. I mean, I don't know how you would do that with all of these states already holding primaries, but there's still some, you know, people who are the never Trump folks.
Yeah, right.
Who are talking about it, but I don't think it's very serious.
There's also some deal making that could be made. They could offer him some sort of a cabinet position if he's willing to give in and say that he's a supporter, right? That's happened in the past, certainly.
Oh, sure. I mean, people still talk about him as a Supreme Court nominee. You know, we have this person that Obama chose, but the Senate won't hold hearings on him. And they're saying they won't until the next president is chosen.
Right.
So the next president will get to fill in the ninth slot on the U.S. Supreme Court. And there is some talk that, you know, if it were Trump, maybe he would select Ted Cruz. But sure, if it's not, you're laughing.
Think about that, though, with all the bad blood between those two guys. And we saw it yesterday, but we've been seeing it for months.
They were best buds for a little while.
For a short time, they were friends. They were cordial to each other. But then the true colors came out and they talked about how each one is a pathological liar and has come unhinged. And even with all that, one of them could say, that's the guy I want in the Supreme Court.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama had a really, they ran against each other in 2008, and he later made her the Secretary of State. So it can happen. And if there is a genuine interest in, you know, keeping Democrats out of the White House, they will come together at some point.
I'm sure this has been talked about, but what if Trump... When's Trump going to announce his running mate? What if it's Ted Cruz?
I don't think it would be Ted Cruz, but
isn't
never
that
know.
A smart move, though?
It could be. I mean, I'm one to believe that he needs, now that he's run as an outsider and been so successful, he actually needs to pick an insider as his VP, just like Obama did with Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Longtime U.S. senator, someone who knew foreign policy really well. I think that would maybe quell some of the fears of Trump if he chose someone who does know what they're doing inside the Beltway. As much as it might hurt him a little bit for choosing like an establishment Republican, I think he should.
But that would be a smart move because all the people who loved Cruz would then...
Marco Rubio people talk about too, because he gave up his Senate seat to run for president, and Cruz has not. He still gets to hold on to his Senate seat because he was in midterm. But people have mentioned Marco Rubio. That might be a smart choice if Marco Rubio is willing to do it.
Will we be able to hear Chris Christie's cries all the way here in Illinois when he is not named as the vice presidential nominee?
We will. We will be able to hear him moaning and crying and I don't see that being a wise pair up because, like I'm saying, I think Trump needs someone who knows D.C., and that would not be Chris Christie.
Yeah.
Why didn't Joe Biden just swoop in and save us all?
Well, he's still, maybe he's going to.
Too late.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, isn't it honestly too late? Could a third party come in right now and...
The only way that that would happen is if something super dramatic happens, like Hillary Clinton gets indicted. And then at the convention, after that first round of voting, when something like that happens, then yes, you could see like a second round of votes. But that is, this is crazy talk. I mean, I don't really,
because look what's been happening. It's all been crazy talk. I want to know what foreign leaders are thinking right now after these results, that it looks like it's going to be Trump.
It's going to be Trump. I mean, the Senate chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is Bob Corker, a Republican from Tennessee. And he actually had good things to say about Trump's foreign policy speech. And if Trump does surround himself with people like that, maybe even in a running mate sense, I think a lot of this will calm down. But he's got a lot of work to do between now and November.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune. If you'd like to jump in with questions or comments, 312-981-7200 is your best bet. It's us, Bill and Wendy, on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Kristen McQuarrie is our guest from the Chicago Tribune. We're trying to make some sense, if we possibly can, out of the political climate that's going on right now. You have some facts about Donald Trump that we may not have known.
I do. It's a little quiz for you, Bill and Wendy.
All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is his middle name? Do you know Donald Trump's middle
name? J.
Donald
Careful.
Jeffrey James.
Swear. Is it Jerome?
John. It's John. Just John, not John.
Don John.
Donald John. Favorite ice cream? What would you guess would be Donald Trump's favorite ice cream flavor?
Ben and Jerry's Chubby Hubby.
Wow, you're really detailed. Cherry vanilla.
Oh.
You know, maybe that goes with like his red hair or something. I don't know.
You should have gone strawberry shortcake. That would have been a good flavor.
Yep.
Favorite food? What does he eat a lot?
Money.
From New York, I'm going to say Hungarian goulash.
Oh, my God.
Oysters.
Hamburgers?
Really?
Hamburgers and meatloaf.
You need with the meatloaf recipe.
He's a regular guy for all
just
of
like
y'all.
Us.
I think
he's
he eats like bonbons all day. But he doesn't eat, when he eats pizza, he only eats the topping. He will not eat the crust.
That's normal.
Trying to keep the weight off. Yeah, a lot of people are not doing the carbs.
I guess.
And so I have three true false questions.
All right.
Okay? Donald Trump loves Starbucks coffee.
I'd say false.
False.
It is false.
Yeah.
He doesn't drink coffee. He does not drink any caffeinated beverages.
Oh, my God. You and Donald Trump are exactly
yet
alike.
Yet another thing he and I have in common.
Oh, here we go. Well, the list grows.
Yep.
His favorite beer is actually Bud Light.
No. I know for a fact he has never had a drink. He doesn't drink.
Correct. He doesn't drink
just like Bill.
Alcohol either. My gosh.
How about that?
And he hates tea.
I'm going to say that's also false.
I'm going to say that's true.
It's true.
It is true.
I win. I win the new president.
Three out of three.
So no beer, no coffee, no tea.
No beer, no coffee, no tea. Nope. And he eats hamburgers and cheeseburgers.
All right. Explain this to me. Normally, if you knew who your front runners were for the Democrats and the Republicans, and we do right now, it's Hillary Clinton and it's Donald Trump. When they square off against each other in the debates, you say to yourself, well, that's where he will be exposed. Because if the debates are about policy, he doesn't seem to have any concrete policy. It's just kind of far-flung theories and stuff. So that'll be his downfall. However, because it's Donald Trump and the rules are different, it might not affect him at all, will it?
It might not. I mean, he's gotten kind of stung with some of those questions in the past.
Yeah.
But he manages to just pick himself up by saying, I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to surround myself with really smart people who will. You know, and Hillary Clinton has not been very specific either. Now, when it comes to foreign policy, because of her previous positions, I expect she's going to clean the floor with him catch him in some very uncomfortable moments, because he won't know a world leader, or he'll mix up the tribal connections in Afghanistan or something. But he has been able to wiggle free from all of that type of criticism. So who are we to think that he won't be able to in the debates, too?
Are they going to have debates in Tanzania? Is that what he called it?
Instead of Tanzania.
Tanzania.
Whoops. Yeah.
And here's another thing that I'm thinking about the debates. Trump seems to be smooth over everything. He does keep his cool. Not that he is nice. He gets mean and throws little like playground and schoolyard barbs at people.
Right.
But Hillary is going to, of course, the lying is going to come up.
Sure.
And then she's going to be defensive. And then her voice gets very scolding.
It does.
And I feel bad for her because I have that same problem. You can ask my kids and husband. But
you get,
I mean,
shrill. Like you just...
Not shrill, but it just, you sound so mean. But it's really hard when you're so emotionally involved in this and someone is accusing you of something. I just think that's going to be so interesting to watch.
It will be. I mean, she does have sort of a capacity to be shrill, and I'm not
scolding.
Saying that. Scolding, yes.
Shrill. It's like a deep voice. I'm
yes.
going to get you.
Yes. And I'm sure she has had
Hillary
you know,
Clinton's
20 voice.
That was like, was that you or was that Hillary Clinton who did that? I couldn't tell who that was.
It was Hillary. They just cut it. They cut the tape in.
Wow. Sure.
But I feel bad for her for doing that. A lot of women, you know, and it's like sometimes being a woman in a man's world, you feel you need to defend yourself more, and you get kind of desperate in your talk.
Right.
And defensive.
You don't, I know, it's an awkward place to be a woman in this type of position because you don't want to sound too feminine.
Right.
Or too high pitched. And so you see her constantly
yes.
bringing her voice
but
down.
Let the record show it's the two women on the air right now talking about it, not the men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I
and
was going to add.
You guys are thinking it.
I was going to add that it's not just, you know, Bernie Sanders' voice grates on me too. You know, it's not
especially
just
when he gets riled up.
Oh gosh, it's just like that hoarse, rough. It sounds like sandpaper. So
mm-hmm.
I've got plenty of criticism for people's voices on you know both men and
except
men.
For Trump.
Trump hasn't bothered me too much. In fact, my daughter, she's 10. She was sitting next to me on the couch when he was giving his victory speech last night, and she said, "You know, he's really nice. I don't know why everybody keeps saying he's so mean."
So what do you say to that?
Well, he was being nice last night.
Oh, at the moment,
he was,
yeah.
In the moment, he
right.
was, you know, praising Ted Cruz and just saying how wonderful America was going to be. And so in her mind, he's a nice guy.
Can I tell you something? Businessmen and women are like that. They're trying to seal the deal. They are nice and they can be really nice. And that's what he is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When he needs to be.
Right.
When he wants to be and needs to be.
And can be very mean, which I bet a lot of business people are, you know.
Right.
In their own little office and not at the board table.
Yeah.
That defensiveness of his, though, he's going to need to chill out. You know, I mean, you can't be on Twitter every half an hour taking
blasting.
Somebody down when you are the Republican nominee for president of the United States.
Why not? I mean, he's been doing it and he's only been rewarded for it. Right?
I would say that if he really wants to win, he has to appeal to those independent swing voters. That is the patch of voters that he needs to appeal to, and they are not going to vote for someone who is so off the cuff. Because now he you know, up to now he's just appealing to Republican primary
sure.
voters. Now he's got to cross over, and I think it will be important for him to not be screaming on Twitter and not, you know, offering these sophomoric responses every time he's criticized.
Interesting. Kristen, thank you for being here. Always appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
Kristen McCreary of the Tribune.
And with Steve Bertrand and Eric Zorn and John Williams of the Mincing Rascals podcast on WGNplus.com.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take a quick break and then some news from Steve. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We started the show today. I said, "May the 4th be with you."
I remember that. Sure.
And what did you say to me?
That I hope your speech impediment corrects itself at some point.
This is a Star Wars day, May the 4th. 4th of May. May the 4th be with you. And this is an important day. Steve, you just reported your top story. The Friends of the Park have had this lawsuit going against the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art for going on 2 years. Bill, you remember we had the director of the Friends of the Parks on
mm-hmm.
2 years ago because we thought, boy, this is a crazy, frivolous lawsuit that's going to go nowhere. 2 years later, nothing has gotten better. And in fact, now it looks like Chicago may lose this museum.
How about that?
It's really stupid. In the studio with us right now is Michael Whitwer. And Michael, you're a writer, you're an author, you've written a book, Empire of Imagination. Go on with the rest of the title of that book.
That is Gary Gygax and the Birth of Dungeons and Dragons.
I didn't know how to pronounce Gygax.
Mm-hmm. So traditional pronunciation of Gygax.
I gagged on Gygax
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah.
You hold degrees from Northwestern, University of Chicago, and you live here in Chicago, and you're a Star Wars fan as well.
I am. I'm a lifelong Star Wars fan. To call it even a fan might be understating it. I love Star Wars.
My husband, Jimmy Mack, is here, co-host of Rebel Force Radio, which is you can find at WGNplus.com. And he says that to me all the time when I say you're a Star Wars fan. You're like, don't call me that. Well, fanatic, aficionado. You guys love Star Wars.
We are pillars of the Star Wars fan community.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes. And may the 4th be with you.
Oh.
And also with you.
Everyone sounds like Cindy Brady all of a sudden, don't they? Everybody in the room.
Can I just tell you, it shows how often people go to church, because I always say, and also with you, they've changed it now in the Catholic Mass to say, and with your spirit.
Oh, they do.
Just so you know, you have to follow along.
Michael, I want to point out with you, aside from all the credits that Wendy said, you also have something of a background in city planning, don't you?
That's exactly right. In my past life, I actually worked in for an urban planning and landscape architecture firm, and I'd worked on a number of projects as a project management and urban planner.
Yeah.
Most notably, the Buckingham Fountain Restoration Project in 2008 and 2009, which was a $25 million renovation to the Buckingham Fountain, which most notably laid the new permeable paver bricks.
It looks fantastic.
It's beautiful.
Great job.
Friends of the Park didn't bother you then?
They were involved. There was a consensus building process in which we had to get by them among everybody else that had a kind of skin in the game, if you will.
And I understand why they are here, to preserve the lakefront. Was it Daniel Burnham that started this? You need to have an unobtrusive view of the lake. Is this it in a nutshell?
No, actually, you know, it's a great question. I'm really glad you brought up Daniel Burnham, because Daniel Burnham is there's probably a picture of Daniel Burnham hanging in the Friends of the Parks office right now. He was known as one of the greatest architects, park advocates, and urban planners of all time. He was the head of the 1893 Columbian Exposition, the World's Fair. Burnham, in his 1909 Plan of Chicago, the most important urban planning document of all time, actually specified for lakefront museums and cultural institutions. Burnham was pro-museums on the lake. People don't know that. No one wants to talk about that. He is not the one that is behind the forever free and clear, the public trust doctrine. That predates Burnham by 70 years or so.
So how did he get away with getting museums built on the lakefront?
Well, it's a little bit of a story. I'm not sure how much in the weeds I want to go. So the way this all went about is that when they were trying to so Grant Park had formed in some very unusual ways. Grant Park is mostly man-made. It's actually the subbase of Grant Park is made with fill from the 1871 Chicago fire, wreckage and rubble that was landfilled in there. There was a breakwater that was at roughly the current shoreline. And that was all filled in with this wreckage and rubble they didn't know where to put after the 1871 Chicago fire. So Grant Park was man-made. When
I had no idea. I'm sorry. I'm not a good Chicago historian. No. I had no idea.
Well, and again, these are relevant items, because I think it does affect the context of both the Friends of the Parks argument and how a lot of people see this. Everyone is looking at it and saying, oh, my gosh, they want to build structures and buildings on my lakefront. Well, there's context here. It's a very unusual issue. So in effect, what happened was Grant Park at the time, there was a lot of private interests that were interested in doing things at Grant Park. Well, Montgomery Ward, who conveniently had his office on Michigan Avenue that was overlooking Grant Park and had this unobstructed view of the lakefront, didn't appreciate that Stanley Field, the nephew of Marshall Field, wanted to put the Field Museum of Natural History in Grant Park. The Field Museum of Natural History was meant to be built in the existing site of the Buckingham Fountain.
Yeah.
So Buckingham Fountain wasn't built till several years later, and there's a more context there. But the gist of it is this. Ward challenges the placement of this museum that really is for everybody, right? It's this world-class collection of stuff that at the time was being housed in the Museum of Science and Industry, or what we know as the Museum of Science and Industry now in Hyde Park. Mm-hmm. Field wants to build this museum. Ward challenges it based on the public trust doctrine, which in effect states that special natural resources like lakefront land are forever to be public land, and they're forever to be open, free, and clear. Now, that is a little bit complicated. What does that mean? I mean, presumably it means free of structure. But one thing that I wanted to point out about the Friends of the Parks argument at this moment is that it really is that their challenge of the Lucas Museum is a gross misinterpretation of the public trust doctrine. The spirit of this doctrine has everything to do with the idea of protecting the public against private interests, i.e. railroads, hotels, amusement ventures, restaurants. That's what they were worried about. They were not worried about world-class museums run by not responsible not-for-profit groups.
Right.
This is not what the intent of the public trust doctrine was.
Can I ask a silly question? Going back to Montgomery Ward having a gripe with Fields, was that just strictly because of the fact that they had competing department stores? Is that part of it, or does that have nothing to do with it at all?
There's a lot of speculation about that. I'm sure there's something in there. I can't tell you one way or the other whether that's fact or not, but I'm sure there was something in there.
I would imagine.
All right, I have to ask you something. If there is this lawsuit going on, it's not for a private, I guess it's private because George Lucas wants to maintain the control of his museum, and with good reason. It's his collection that he is paying for to share with the city. And I think a huge misconception is you think George Lucas and you think Star Wars and you think, oh, this is going to be a big, you know, Star Wars museum. That is such a small portion of it. The Museum of Narrative Art, I don't know for a fact, but it began in radio dramas and television and movies. And isn't that what it's all about? Weren't there going to be workshops? And this was a whole series of things that doesn't really focus that much on Star Wars.
Absolutely. And amen. May the fourth be with you.
And with your spirit.
That's good. I'm so glad you brought that up, because the Star Wars part of this is such a misconception, right? So there's a group of people out there that says, well, only Star Wars geeks are going to go see this. So firstly, let me start with the Star Wars part. Let's go ahead and just air that out. Star Wars is the most valuable intellectual property on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It is a $40 billion industry since it started in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars is not a niche interest anymore. It's not for geeks. It's the number one movie of all time, as we know it, The Force Awakens. This is not a niche interest. As a matter of fact, it's one of the most accessible realms of fiction that we have, really. So starting there, if it was just Star Wars, that'd probably be still worth it.
Exactly. But I think a lot of misconceptions came out there. This is a museum. You know, we have the Field Museum with all these exhibits. This is just going to be for Star Wars geeks to go to. That's not what it's about.
The Lucas Museum is actually going to host comic art, magazine covers, Norman Rockwell. George Lucas has one of the world's largest collections of Norman Rockwell art. He has artwork from all over the world. Wendy, you and me, we've been to Lucasfilm. We've been to Skywalker Ranch. We see the way that George presents his passions and his collection with taste and class. And we're talking about things that are far beyond Star Wars, things like Charlie Chaplin's hat is just sitting there mm-hmm. within George Lucas's collection. He has a massive collection of film memorabilia and historical pop culture artifacts that should be on display in a museum, not housed up in a warehouse in Marin
right.
or wherever he has all this stuff stored. Also, he's going to be taking in private collections. They're going to be donated to be viewed. He has tons of connections within the modern art world. And
how could this be a miss? How could we let this go out of our city?
It's the philanthropy of what he's doing. He's donating, gosh, almost $750 million of his own money out of pocket to make what is now McCormick Place East, the Lakeside Center, or whatever they call that thing, is former Mayor Daley used to call it the Berlin Wall of Lake Michigan.
Yeah,
and so we're proposing tearing it down, a smaller footprint being made by the actual Lucas Museum, and then beautiful parkland surrounding it.
But now the Friends of the Park are not going for that. We're going to take a break, and there's a rally that is happening this afternoon at 4:30 p.m. We'll have all the details on that, and I just think, you know, George Lucas and Melody Hobson are now saying, okay, whatever, we're going to shop it around. This is going to be a huge loss in so many ways for the city. We'll continue. We're talking with Michael Witwer. Jimmy Mack is here. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WG. It's Bill and Wendy, and Jimmy Mack is here from Rebel Force Radio. It's a podcast that you can find at WGN Plus. We're also talking to Michael Witwer, author, writer. You're from Chicago. You have a book, Empire of Imagination, Gary Gygax and the Birth of Dungeons and Dragons, degrees from Northwestern and the University of Chicago, and you've also consulted on a wide variety of projects, including, and most notably, the renovation of the Buckingham Fountain. All right, so the Friends of the Park have this suit going on where they want to preserve the lakefront here in Chicago. This has been going on for 2 years. Is it going to go to court? Why is this taking so long?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, ultimately, we're already entangled in a complex legal issue. And there's going to be a lot of people that disagree with me on this, but I fundamentally challenge the Friends of the Parks' legal viability, their case. Yes, it is based on the public trust doctrine, which is inherently a very complex land use issue. But here's the problem. The Friends of the Parks knows that simply by engaging in a lawsuit, which can be initiated by any private citizen or any organization on this particular ground, they know that by getting it to trial, that the project will leave. It will encumber the project in such a way that George Lucas will take his museum elsewhere.
Because of the time element, Lucas's people don't want to waste the time. They want to get the museum built.
And why should they? They've been waiting 2 years to break ground on this, as this is almost a stall tactic. You don't think they'd win in court?
I think there's no viability to their case for two reasons. The public trust doctrine, it's fundamentally meant to protect, again, as I mentioned earlier, against private interests.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is twofold. One of which is that any judge in his right mind would initially look at the land use precedent and say, goodness gracious, this is they're going to build a museum on the museum campus. There's already a precedent in place for building on this man-made land, this exact protected man-made land that's already under the public trust doctrine.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing to look at and say, well, that it checks that box. The second part is how compelling the public interest case is. Offering this access to this one-of-a-kind, objectively important collection. Jimmy, do you know the numbers on what it would really ultimately provide us?
Oh, my God. We're talking about Lucas alone making a donation of almost $1 billion to the city of Chicago to refine that area of Lakeshore. We're talking about 1,500 construction jobs, 350 permanent jobs, decades of tourism dollar, educational opportunities for all the kids within the city and beyond, and access to George Lucas's priceless collection of artwork. So there's a lot at stake here, and it's slipping through our fingers, folks. This is a unique and awesome cultural opportunity for the city of Chicago, and it's slipping through our fingers due to a technicality on an arcane and obsolete technical loophole.
So how do we help? There's a Save the Lucas Museum rally that's happening this afternoon at 4:30 p.m. 17 North State is that where it kicks off. This is kind of last minute, but this is last minute right now because they're going to bail on us.
You know, Wendy, I have it on very good inside authority that we are an eyelash away from losing the Lucas Museum. Not even more so than people realize, an eyelash away from this thing flying away as early as the next couple days. So to that end, we thought it was important to actually rally the troops immediately. And we'll have somewhere between a gaggle and a throng of people this afternoon. So, no, please come out and support this thing. I cannot tell you how important it is. I think people up to this point thought, we're playing a game of chicken with the Friends of the Parks, but they'll never go through with this. Well, they've gone through with it. It's a done deal now. It is the 11th hour, and we are almost at a point where this thing's literally about to fly away. And I believe if people really realized that, they would come out and support our cause and really put pressure on this group to back down. They need to compromise.
So leave work early today. Leave the office a half an hour early. 4:30 p.m. start time. Save the Lucas Museum rally. It's happening at 17 North State. That's where everybody's congregating. And look at how hard the city tried to get the Olympics here. Do you remember that?
Sure.
And that would have entailed some building on the lakefront, and that would have come and gone. This is going to be here forever.
Forever.
Michael, can I attend dressed as an Ugnaught? Would that be okay?
As an Ugnaught.
Oh, don't pretend you don't know.
I love Star Wars, but I don't live it and breathe it. What's an Ugnaught?
I don't know.
I'm missing the joke here.
don't look at me.
We don't know what that is.
All right, I don't know what anything is. All right, so we will put a link up on our Facebook page on WGNRadio.com as well. This is it. It's come down to the 11th hour, the 11th second. Save the Lucas Museum rally, 17 North State Street. It kicks off at 4:30 p.m. today. And good luck. And I believe we're going to have some coverage going on this. And I hope there are millions of people that show up. Will George Lucas be there?
You know, you never know. Never say never.
Wouldn't that be nice? I hope he gets to see this. I'm sure he's a little bit upset about all this. I'm positive he is.
You know, I'll go back to, again, a source that I kind of a friend of a friend. But yeah. I can tell you one thing that I think is bothering George and bothering his wife is that He wants to see that Chicago wants this.
Yeah.
And again, we are being held hostage by an interest group right now that does not represent the majority. Let's show them that this is not the majority feeling about the Lucas Museum.
Great. Why didn't this rally happen earlier? Why did we wait so long? Did we think that this was just going to go away? Because I know there was news yesterday that, you know, they decided to suspend the lawsuit. And then a little later in the day, we're not really going to suspend it anymore.
Yeah.
So there's a small portion of people that I get what they're going for. They're trying to, you know, beautify the lakefront. But how are they to speak for the rest of the city?
Michael, we should have had an inflatable museum ready to blow up and put in place yesterday while they suspended their lawsuit. We should have had a museum thrown in there. Guys, thank you.
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate
this. Thanks, guys.
And what is your website? How do people find your blog that you have, Michael?
Thank you. My website is Empire of Imagination. That's www.empireofimagination.com. Or you can find me at thelastgenxer.com.
Michael Whitwer, Lucas Museum rally today at 4:30, 17
North State.
Good luck. May the 4th be with you.
And also with you.
Oh, beautiful. Steve, thanks. Wendy, your husband Jimmy went Full Metal Hochberg on us there for a minute there, didn't he?
I know, and it's weird because Hochberg was listening and wanted to chime in. He called Kevin, didn't he, and said,
did he call in?
Why?
He did.
What did he say in a nutshell?
He was basically saying he doesn't see a negative in having the Lucas Museum.
Right.
Well, there are people who are not into it, and that's fine, but it just seems like one organization should not make a decision for the entire city.
I wonder if they put this to a vote. What the vote would come out to. What do you think? I think a lot more people would be for this. I would imagine a lot more people would be for this than against this.
Well, and remember, they're not, the Friends of the Parks isn't deciding. It's a judge who's going to decide.
But what they
said, Friends of the Parks, they're taking existing law and saying under existing law, this site shouldn't be eligible for a museum.
But it is the museum campus, as we just learned, which was pretty interesting to me. And why hasn't this gone to court? If a judge said, okay.
That's what we're talking about, Wendy. They're suing in court.
I know, but why did it take 2 years to get to this point right now? And if you're George Lucas and you want to give something to a city, honestly, if I were he, I would have said, I'm out of here.
Take it to San Francisco.
Yeah, because it's 2 years. This has been dragged out, and it does seem like a stall tactic.
Well, and so today the Emanuel administration is going over the federal judge's head, if you will, to an appellate court saying, look, I'm going to lose this museum, and it's because of one group who's suing. We want you to rule now on it because going through the regular procedure is going to end up making the case a moot case because the museum will no longer be here.
Right. The time element will make you lose the battle, right?
Right.
And again, there's a rally this afternoon at 4:30. I haven't heard this announced anywhere else. The rally today, 17. I didn't write it down.
I want to say on State Street. Does that sound
17
right?
North State.
Yeah.
It is the Save the Lucas Museum rally, 17 North State Street, and it kicks off at 4:30 this afternoon. If you're for it and you can get out of work early, go by.
Yeah. All right. If you're looking for an apartment, if anybody in our listening audience is looking for an apartment or a roommate, I think I can help you out.
I'm married. I have a house. I'm going to stay put
for
now.
You're happy with your situation?
But things go south.
Wendy, you got to have a backup plan. Always have a plan B. There's a lovely apartment available in the Ukrainian Village. This is on Craigslist today.
Could you explain where Ukrainian Village is? I'm a 708 or so.
It is in the Ukraine.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
Do we know about the area?
I'm trying to think of what exactly the
Kevin,
parameters
you know?
Would
it's
be.
It's like due west pretty much of downtown, kind of just a few miles.
Nice little area, great restaurants,
it's definitely
shops.
Up and coming.
Oh, yeah.
Any thrift stores?
I think there are some thrift stores in the Ukrainian Village.
All
I think
right.
you could, if you're in the market for thrift, you could find some.
Sounds good. Maybe I'd like to have a little stabbing cabin somewhere.
Well, then this could be your place. Now, I'm going to read you the requirements. Again, this is on Craigslist today, and it's for anybody who's looking for a situation. You want to move into an apartment with a roommate. Here's what is written in the Craigslist ad for this apartment. It's located at Western in Chicago. So that is, Kevin, you help me out with this. That's an up-and-coming community. That's
Absolutely.
A pretty good place.
Yeah, it's a hot spot right now.
All right. Here are the requirements for you, Wendy, or anybody who might want this apartment.
All right, and it comes with a roommate. This is someone looking for a roommate. Okay, I thought it was my own place to rent.
No. Somebody already has it, but they want a roommate.
And
here's what they say in their ad. See if any of this applies to you.
Write this down.
Right off the bat, it says, you must love Satan.
Oh, God, I'm out.
This is a... Don't be so quick to judge.
Oh, I'm quick.
Maybe it's a very nice apartment. Maybe the rest of what you hear in the ad on Craigslist will make you realize, that aside, I think this is a great place to live.
I could pretend if I had to. Okay, maybe I could get this. All right, go to the next one.
You have dark clothing, don't you?
I do wear black a lot.
All right, you're fine.
And I have red lipstick.
All right. Well,
and I have horns on my head.
You're already ahead of the game. You must love Satan, as I mentioned. This is a satanic space, and the two current roommates... No, I'm sorry. I thought there was one. It turns out there's two, but that shouldn't bog you down.
Three's a company, two.
Bop, 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 bop. One of them is 25 and a male. The other one is 34, also a male.
Mm.
You like guys.
Thank you for telling me.
They are both actively involved in non-theistic Satanism.
I don't know what that means.
I think that's lower-level Satanism. I think if you look at the ladder of Satanism, that's somewhere toward the bottom.
It's the bargain rack?
Yeah. It's like you
What's
believe
it called?
Non-theistic Satanism. I think, and I want to say that's toward the bottom of the ladder, but because it's Satan, I got to reverse that and say that's toward the top of the ladder because you're moving down because it's Satanism. So that's somewhere on one of the first few rungs. I don't think it's as intense as Satanism can be.
According to Wikipedia, which I hate, but it's...
Wikipedia.
That's the first thing that popped up. Theistic Satanism is the belief that Satan is a supernatural being or force that individuals may contact and supplicate to.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. And represents loosely affiliated or independent groups which holds such a belief. Another
now, that's
characteristic...
theistic, though, you're saying, right?
Right.
All right. So this is non-theistic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Non-theistic.
All right. So it's the exact opposite of what I just said.
Yeah. Yeah. It says in the ad, we suppose if you're into Thelema, Aleister Crowley, or other left-hand path isms.
What about Aleister Cook?
It doesn't mention...
Because I don't know these other...
It does not mention Aleister Cook at all. You'd be considered, perhaps, if you brought an amazing beast, like a housebroken goat.
I don't have one.
You
at
don't
least
have
not
any
a
goats
housebroken
at all?
One. He still wets
all right,
on the
that's
floor.
Gonna, that's going to create a problem, I think. Because if that happens, then we could sure try. If you're a theistic Satanist, that's the kind you just described, who believe that Satan is the supreme being, just don't be sacrificing any animals on the premise. So I think what these gentlemen are saying, Wendy, is we want somebody who shares our same Satanistic values, but don't go overboard with it. All things in moderation.
Okay, so this is Satanism light. They're atheists, though, aren't they?
It doesn't say anything about being atheists. I think if you're a Satanist, I don't know that you can be an atheist, because if you believe in one extreme, you would believe in the other. If you're believing in evil, you'd believe in good, wouldn't you? I think. It says here, we are obviously open-minded, which is important. You must be willing to actively raise a pig, are you?
I love pigs.
Right.
I All love right. bacon.
Well,
I love pork chops.
It says this means if home letting, if you're at home letting it go, if we're at home and we're letting it go, then you need to make sure that the pig is fed. It's important that we raise our pig beast the right way with Satanistic values.
They would like me because I can make pig noises.
Could you? Oh, there it goes. Now, this could confuse their pig. Their pig might be baffled by those pig noises because they're dead on accurate. You must be interested in more than one collective communal living arrangement. Ideally, we'd like to have people share roles, even to cooking larger meals. It's funny how they go quickly from being Satanistic and worshiping the Dark Lord of Evil to who exactly will be cooking when and where.
Well, it looks like it's very important for them to have family meals.
Oh, I guess so.
And
yeah.
Someone needs to stir the cauldron every once in a while.
No, you're right. In general, it says, I don't mind paying extra for food if someone else is going to prepare it, and things like that.
They want sharing?
Yeah, it seems like they're big proponents of sharing. You must be okay with a friend that runs a food dehydration system in our kitchen.
See, that's where the bacon's coming in. You have to take care of the pig and fatten the pig.
Oh, maybe.
And then they dehydrate the pig and make bacon and jerky.
I can't tell if they want to sacrifice the pig or the pig is just a lovable pet. I can't tell.
Is it named? Because if it has a name, it's a lovable pet.
No. It is not named. The dehydrators make a nice white noise sound, and that makes sleeping easier.
See, I would like that.
The pluses just keep adding up, Wendy. You must be okay with satanic gatherings, are you?
Not a fan.
No? We just might be starting a chapter with a larger organization. Well, they've got, you know, they've got dreams of being bigger and better. You must not bring narcotics into the house.
I wouldn't do that.
You cannot have them shipped to the house.
Wouldn't do that either.
You cannot smoke indoors.
Smoke what?
It doesn't say.
Pork?
It does not.
Because if you smoke
say.
Your meat, I would like to do no, that in I get the house. It.
You must not be a vegan. No
I am
thanks.
Not.
All right. We love critters, it says. We do not wish any excessive harm to most critters.
Most?
That's what it says.
See, that pig is suspect.
But your irrational logic isn't something that we want to deal with. You must be okay with animals being present. We pet sit our non-human relatives from dogs to large birds. And then it says in all caps, Wendy, no cats. I repeat, no cats. Both of us have allergies to cats.
But not to pigs.
No, they seem very open to the idea of pigs roaming about freely. It's just cats that these particular Satanists have a problem with. So there's a number provided that you can call. You can send them an email. Like I said, they live in the Ukrainian village at Western in Chicago. The price is right. It's $400 plus utilities. That's not out of line.
How much a month?
$400 a month plus utilities.
Oh, well, that'll push you over.
And my guess is the lights are constantly flickering. I don't know if that counts, costs more or the same. I just love that it opens with, you must love Satan, because then you say to yourself, well, these guys have an agenda. But then it talks about, you know who's going to cook when, and, you know, the fact that you can't like cats.
You know who else really liked a pig?
Who says?
How did the pig tracks get on the ceiling?
Spider pig, spider pig, does whatever a spider pig does. Can he swing from a web? No, he can't. He's a pig. Look out, he is a spider pig.
Oh, that's beautiful.
See?
That's beautiful.
Maybe Homer can move in.
All right. Well, if you're interested, get cracking, because somebody's going to use up this property quick. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. A correction to something I said. There was a text. I was saying, we were telling you about this apartment that's available if you're looking for a roommate in Ukrainian Village. It's at Western in Chicago. Only $400 a month. Not bad. Plus utilities. They asked that you love Satan. That could be a sticking point with some people. But you asked where Ukrainian Village was located, and I said the Ukraine, and I'm wrong on two counts. I know that Ukrainian Village is not located in the Ukraine. That was obvious. But just by saying the Ukraine, I was incorrect.
Someone has texted and said for future reference, saying it is in the Ukraine is like saying it's in the France.
Right.
But vive la France. Long live the France.
Right.
So it was called the France. They dropped the and so did the Ukraine.
Ukraine was the Ukraine for a long, long time. And then just a couple of years ago, they dropped the. There is no more the in the Ukraine. It's just Ukraine. So I apologize to everybody in Ukraine. I will try to be more careful in the future. I always get upset, like with older relatives, you know, sometimes there's a word. For instance, flight attendants were stewardesses for 20-some-odd years. So I have relatives and some friends who still say stewardesses, and you go, oh, no, it's not. It's flight attendants now. There's a lot of stuff like that.
People still say waitresses, but it's supposed to be servers.
Yeah, yeah.
Waiters and waitresses, now right. It's servers.
Right. All of my mistakes are Eastern European in nature for some weird reason. I can't explain why, but they are.
Well, 630 was interested for a little bit in this roommate situation in Ukraine Village.
Mm-hmm.
But it says, I love how they tell you they're open-minded, but then if you're a vegan, you're an idiot.
Right. Or a cat lover.
Yes. Right. No vegans and no cat lovers.
Right. That's how it plays out. But
and
if
you got to feed the pig.
There's
Isn't
that.
Is that code?
I think it is code. I think it is. All right, we're going to take a quick break in a little bit. Ro and Anna will be by to tell us what they have coming up on their show. Stay here. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.